Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 17th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on the scripture reading left off last week. We read chapter 1 of Matthew. This week we'll be reading chapter 2, read by Alexander Swoby.
Chapter 2. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him." When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophet, "And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel." Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, and said, "Go and search diligently for the young child. And when ye have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also." When they had heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeareth to Joseph in a dream, saying, "Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him." When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, "Out of Egypt have I called my son." Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremy the prophet, saying, "In Ramah was there a voice heard, lamentation, and weeping, and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children, and would not be comforted, because they are not." But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeareth in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life." And he arose, and took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding, being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, "He shall be called a Nazarene."
Okay, let's see, I don't really have a topic particularly, but we do want to talk about a few things before we open up to our Q&A, but I guess first we'll see if we have any announcements or any questions. Jan, Terry, any announcements or any questions?
We do have a number of announcements tonight, John, or not announcements,
okay.
Questions.
All right. By the way, how's my voice coming through? Loud enough?
Yeah, loud and clear.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Your answer will help in our fight against 5G and also with the mask issue and any forced removal of children. I live in North Idaho. We have or had a discussion that we need to find out if our elected officials and judges are required to be bonded or they can be held personally liable. For example, the elected city and county officials have authorized scenarios that violate our personal rights. In a recent letter, we used the following. In the Supreme Court case, Owens versus Independence, it personally allows us to claim that you have deprived us of our rights. In Title 18, U.S. Code Section 241 and 242, it states that if convicted of this deprivation of rights, per citizen who joins the case, you will be fined $10,000 per person, plus 10 years in jail or both. Title 42, U.S. Code Section 183, Section 1985, and Section 1986 clearly establishes our right to sue anyone who violates our constitutional rights. Can you give us guidance on A, if we should find out if our elected officials and judges have these bonds, and B, what other steps we can take as we expose this tyranny and or file specific actions? As I understand your previous responses, no matter what, we will be shooting for federal court with the deprivation of rights claims.
Right. Well, look, it is true that these elected officials are supposed to have bonds. I doubt any of them have them. Maybe a few do. But I know whenever the question is brought up or anything, they ignore answering it like we do with anything else. And silence is fraud when they have a duty to speak and they remain silent. Again, everything in the courts, whether it be the federal courts or even the state courts, it's an uphill battle trying to get justice in these courts. We do know that President Trump has put in quite a few hundred, I think a little over 300 if I recall, new judges. You know, I'm not sure how many judges there really are in the federal level. That's a good thing. Maybe I'll see if I can't find that out, get a good appreciation on what percentage of judges that Trump has put in. But in any event, again, judges basically, they seem to maintain the status quo. And if you're applying any statutes against any of the individuals within government or even the judges, again, you put on ignore and they just don't answer. And we're not going to get anywhere unless, you know, once in a while, I guess you get a good judge and you could get a fair hearing, but that is extremely rare. We have found that far and in between. And until we get to the other side being that the deep state is finally taken out and justice finally prevails, you know, we're going to be filing a paper very soon, a very short paper. Originally it was only going to be one page, a very short, one paragraph, and I think it's going to be two or maybe three pages, but I thought I'd be done with that before tonight and maybe even take a look at that. But it's going to deal with ultimately the abuse of these judges particularly. But the fact that, you know, we've lost any justice in our courts, that they ignore these things, and that when any elected individual that takes an oath to secure, uphold, defend, et cetera, the Constitution, and then they start to assault and attack our Bill of Rights, these people are warring against the Constitution. They now are traitors. And they need to, and they're a bad behavior, and they need to be removed from office. And that's basically what the paper is going to talk about. And when we get it done, again, it will be a short paper, and we'll read it probably next week because I don't think it's going to be more than two pages, three at most. But even with that, it's not going to be a lot. This is the problem we have. I was looking up to see. I went through Congress. I wanted to look at the voting. You know, how these congressmen voted and how the senators voted, particularly concerning the Second Amendment. And it's pretty alarming because the results proves conspiracy in itself, in the fact that an entire party, I don't know that I found one that is not the case in the case of a Democrat voting to protect our Second Amendment. In every case, every single Democrat has voted against defending the Bill of Rights, trying to destroy our unalienable rights that we, the people, placed, and we said, don't touch this. These are unalienable rights. These are God-given rights. You have no power, no authority to make changes or to license or to prevent, remove, change, alter these things that we've put into the Bill of Rights. And, of course, the Bill of Rights is just a small list of our unalienable rights, which is God-given. So who are these people that they think that they can come and they can decide what rights they may or may not want to give us? So anyway, the Bill of Rights is untouchable, and they have been trying to destroy the Bill of Rights for quite some time. The United States Supreme Court ignores, in the First Amendment, the right for redressing. And we see the big movement out there that really seems to be funded by the Democrats. I hate to say that, but it's true. Antifa and all these different groups, they want their freedom of speech. They demand their freedom of the speech. They demand as if they've done anything to build this nation. They've done nothing but destroy this nation. They've done nothing good. And yet they come and destroy our cities and destroy, kill people and silence people, beat people, and do whatever they please, claiming that they have a right to do this. But you don't have a right to speak your piece. You don't have a right to state what it is that you think that it should be. And especially if you're supporting the Constitution, you don't have a right to do that either. So anyway, I was quite alarmed to see that if I recall, and again, I was just working on this earlier today, I didn't see one Democrat that stuck up for, particularly I was looking at the Second Amendment, not one Democrat that stood up for our unalienable right to defend ourselves from them, because that's the purpose of the Second Amendment, is to defend ourselves from those people. Of course, we can use it to defend ourselves against others, but the biggest threat is government. That has always been the biggest threat. We did do a paper quite some time ago, and I think we read this paper. It is available up on our website under the grand jury right here under Action Against the Judiciary. And one of those papers we wrote is what governments do and what happens when governments decide to take the guns away from people. It always, always ends up with genocide? Yeah, genocide, I think it's called. It always ends up with them coming out and killing the people in every single case. And that's just the way it's been in the 20th century, time after time after time after time again. Millions and millions and millions of people slaughtered by their own government as soon as they take away their weapons. And that's what always happens. This is socialism, communism, Nazism. Doesn't matter what kind of ism it is, they're all the same. They use our... In the case of America, they use our rights and demand that they have their rights and then use it against us and then reject our ability to, you know, you exercise those same rights and then do nothing but destruction. So anyway, I guess that's about all I have to say about that. Okay. Jan?
I'm looking for an opinion regarding the PDF response I just received from my school district. It's self-explanatory what I wanted on the Right to Know form. The reason for my email to them was basically to find out if we taxpayers will receive a reduction in our property taxes since the schools were closed for months and appear in our districts to continue to be closed if Wolf doesn't say anything different for the fall. As an NLA member, I'm looking to find out if I should, can pursue getting the info I originally requested. This is a Pennsylvanian.
Well, I think, clearly anybody paying attention and seeing what Trump is doing can only conclude that he's working to get rid of the income tax because it's an unlawful tax. It's a direct tax. And so is a tax on property. If you have to pay tax every year on a piece of property that you own, and if you don't pay that tax and they take it away from you, then you don't own that tax. You've been enslaved. So property tax is also an unlawful tax. Many people will say, Well, what are we going to do? How's the government going to run if we don't have property tax, if we don't have income tax, and so on and so forth? They don't understand how things work. There is lawful taxes, and there's plenty of money for lawful taxes. Most of the things that they're doing with the taxes that they collect, they use it to benefit themselves. They line their pockets, of course. They support all kinds of things. They spend billions and billions of dollars on different issues that they want to support. That's anti-constitution, destructive to our way of life, and so on. Anything that supports their position. And they abuse that money. They'll maybe bribe sheriffs or something of that nature by saying, hey, we're going to fund you so much money, we're going to give you this or give you that, but you have to agree to this or agree to that. And they do that with states, different governments within the states, whether city, county, or the state itself, and, of course, with different agencies. Particularly, I know they love to do this with the sheriffs, where the sheriffs will take the money. You know, all of this is unlawful and needs to be stopped. So property tax is something I think is going to disappear soon. The Trump is working on that tax holiday. I'm not sure whether he actually got it through yet, but he is working on that. And I think he's doing that through executive order, which is kind of interesting the way he's going about doing this. But people are going to be very, very happy and have more money. They're going to get they're going to not want to pay tax anymore, and I think that's where we're heading. I think next year, that's where we're going to head with doing away with the income tax, which is unlawful. It's a direct tax. The Constitution is clear on that, and I do think it's going to be followed up by the property tax. We the people can push that through. If we move dramatically in that direction by next year, by next year the deep state has been totally surgically removed from our government, and these judges are come under indictment that have been denying due process, because we are indicting judges left and right here at National Liberty Alliance. We don't bring that up too often, but very recently we just filed a lot of papers and on decisions and orders. We must have filed about 30 of them, and we'll be filing contempt of court on these judges that refused to accept our decision and order after they defaulted, and the people in the processes of whatever was going on at the court, they defaulted. And then the next step after that is to indict them. So we have about another 30 judges that's going to be indicted. And in these cases, I think we may do is we may indict the lawyers that are standing up to push all of these unlawful positions, like taking people's property without due process. But they work together. A lawyer will work together with through the mortgage companies, let's say, or even the taxes. If it's working with a city or a county or town. I think it's town or cities they take the properties, not the counties. But the counties do participate with that process. It's a county attorney that steps up usually that will defend this in the court if they have to. But no record is kept. No signature is made. Nothing. No. You know, when they do this removal of property for non-judicial foreclosures or for not paying your taxes, again, a non-judicial foreclosure, it's done without due process. They just take your property, but they give the appearance of if it gone through a court by using the court and the court allowing itself to be used in order to appear. Same thing happens with the IRS, with tax court. You go to tax court, it's in a federal court building, and there's a room there that they use all the time, and it's for, Title 26 code that they'll use it. They rent, they pay a judge additional money, a stipend of some kind, in order to run the tax court, and they give them a big fat check if they get a guilty. The judge is working on making sure that the individual is found guilty. And they stack the juries and so on and so forth. So all these illegal things that are going on, tax court doesn't exist in our Constitution. There's no power or authority for one to exist. And yet the federal court systems allow that to happen to go through. The United States Supreme Court, again, does nothing about it, says nothing about it. And by the way, that's the next paper we're going to put in, another short paper concerning that. These are going to be in informations that we're going to put into the federal government. This is the kind of the final shot before the bow, so to speak, with the federal courts. You know, we've already put papers in great detail on a lot of these things, but we're going to choose the most biggest issues. Due process is one. The fact that there are thousands of people put in jail every year for tax courts that don't have the power or the authority to do that. It's debt is prison. The whole thing is built on a lie. If anybody read Title 26, you'd lose your mind trying to figure out what they're even talking about. And I'm serious about it. I have no clue what they're talking about. And I've read through a lot of these parts, different places. It's just nonsense, nothing but nonsense. But hidden in that nonsense are key paragraphs or statutes, codes, or whatever you want to call them, that they use in order to create this illusion of justice when in fact it's injustice. So anyway, this is something we the people can push forward once we get onto the other side, and I would think after the election, I think we'll have a lot of momentum to be able to push this through. But again, this requires to some degree people to be woken up and to get that critical mass for us to achieve our goal, which is one of the projects we're working on. We have the Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs project that we're working on particularly, and that I think is going to be very powerful. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So, but anyway, going to have to wait till we get into courts of justice to get any justice, because right now nothing but courts of injustice seem to exist. All right, next question.
Okay.
And by the way, if anybody has any questions or comments, star 6 to get into the queue. Sorry, Jan, go ahead.
Yeah. I have done the process of default, waited the 31 days, sent the declaration of default. How long do I wait to see if they will respond, or do they need to?
Well, I need to, it'd be nice to know a little more about the case, and that's all it says. It doesn't say anything else.
Right.
Well, you know, you can do your affidavit of default, and you can file it in a court case, and it's not going to go anywhere unless you push it. You know, you have to write up the papers for the judge to sign. First order of business I would do is to get a default is I'd go see the clerk first and file it with the clerk, an affidavit of default. Make sure you get your paperwork with the seal on it that it's been filed. And then at that point, take your order to the judge, write your order up from whatever your wherefore clause was that you expect the judge to sign, and attach your affidavit of default to that. Place it before him. You don't need to wait for any kind of a hearing to do this. You can go up and see him in his chambers or her chambers and ask for him or her, hey, I need your signature here, and see where that goes. You know, at that point, you know, if they don't, they have to, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They got to sign. Doesn't mean they're gonna, you know. Depends on how bold they are and how much you know they get away with within their courts, but if you just filed it into the court case and you're sitting waiting for them to do something, and you're sitting waiting for someone to give you what you asked for in your wherefore clause, and if you don't have a wherefore clause, if you haven't done a counter action against them and have a wherefore clause, then there's nothing for them to give you. But at least you can then move that for the court case to be shut down. You know, cease and desist because they defaulted. So if you don't push it, they're not going to give it to you. Next question.
Okay. I just had an epiphany about the sheriffs. If the police represent and protect the state and the sheriff represents and protects the people, why are there so few sheriffs when the people far outnumber the public officials? Both are paid by taxpayer dollars.
I don't think I understand the question. Read that again.
Well, you have sheriffs that are supposed to protect the people. There's a lot of people out there, a lot more than the state. You know, the police protect the state. So how are the sheriffs supposed to protect the people if there's so few of them?
Well, look, they do have power and authority, and they most cases the police forces will be obedient to the sheriff if they try to take over whatever it is they want to do, generally speaking, but not in all cases. The problem is most sheriffs don't understand their powers and authorities. That's just to begin with, and that's the major and the biggest problem. Cities and towns and villages, if they want their police forces and they can provide enough funds to be able to have those police forces, well, good. Unfortunately, the federal government gives a lot of money to the states that provide for the police processes within the state and however they work all that out. You know, I mean, some money comes from the county taxes, some from the state, and some from the town and villages, whatever incomes and taxes that they have going through. They make most of their monies in the courts. That's why they're out there giving tickets to pay for that court to be up there and for the police force to be out there. And once that dries up, a lot of these places are not going to be able to afford police forces. But if a city or someplace wants a police force or a town, they need to provide for that on their own. The state, I don't think, should be giving any monies for that. If anything, they should be giving monies to the counties for the purpose of supporting the sheriff and to have more deputies and put more money into the sheriff's process than in any other police force. I think that's where it should go. And that seems to make logical sense, of course. But the other ones have to, support themselves one way or another. The big thing also is that anything big happens, there's always posse comitatus, of course. And then you have the state police, and I wouldn't say that the state police is necessarily bad to a degree. They should be, of course, patrolling the highways, not looking to give tickets or anything, but dealing with different things, state roads or whatever. And I suspect that that's okay to some degree, but they're still subservient to the sheriff. The sheriff, again, is the top cop when any state police is within the boundaries of the particular county. They're still subservient to the sheriff. Same thing with any federal agency of any police abilities. They're subservient also to the sheriff. As a matter of fact, anytime a federal agent comes into an area to make an arrest for some reason, or to exercise some kind of a warrant, they need to go to the sheriff, and the sheriff has to oversee that. Other than that, they shouldn't be doing that. And it's up to the sheriff to make sure that that happens. It's up to the sheriff to put that word out and to throw these federal agents out of their county that abuse their powers and come into their county to try to abuse their powers. But there's only one way the sheriff's going to know of these things, because they're not taught these things. No one tells them that. They don't go out and study to try to figure these things out on their own. They, too, raise their hand and swear to uphold and defend the Constitution, and the moment they finish those words, they're already abusing the Constitution, abusing their powers and authorities by not defending the people because they don't have the knowledge. How do they know whether they are defending or supporting the Constitution if they don't know it? But we've been so brainwashed that people don't even think about that, and sheriffs don't even think about that. From time to time, they do, and they wonder what they can do here or there, then they go seek a bar attorney and they get statutory answers instead of common law answers. And so that's why we, the people, have to fix this problem. And the president can't fix this problem. The president can support us, but he can't fix the problem. We, the people, have to fix this problem. And that's why we have, our campaign going, okay, on our front page, and again, I'll talk about this in a few minutes, and we put up a video on this. It's just a short video really expressing and talking about the campaign for constitutional sheriffs. But here it is, Donate to Save Our Republic to NLA's campaign for constitutional sheriffs. We need to get this book into the hands of every sheriff. And with this book, it pretty well lays out all of their powers, their authorities, gives them a really decent education in the Constitution, particularly focusing in on the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, which is the most important as far as they're concerned. All right, next question.
Okay, what exactly do the sheriffs do to protect the people? I am aware that they transport prisoners, serve papers, and manage evictions. What do they do to protect the people? It seems that they are only doing servant-type functions for the state. Do their oaths include directives to protect the people?
Well, again, yeah, they're treated like water boys, and as long as they don't have understand their powers and authorities, they'll behave as the same. But they need to really get more active, more involved, take over a lot more, oversee a lot more, and get themselves involved in a lot more. But they can't do that unless they have an understanding of their powers and authorities. And we, the people, have to make sure that they're acknowledged by the state government, the county government, and that they are well-funded enough. We can make sure that happens, but first we have to educate the sheriffs before we can get the funds to help push them along and to be more active. Take the case of the recent arrest of Millie Weaver with the Shadowgate release documentary. Just went out, I believe it was just today that it was just released, and she was arrested today, I think. Could have been over the weekend, but I think it was this morning. And I don't know, as a matter of fact, I believe it was Friday, because I heard that they did it purposely on Friday. The release, I think, was supposed to be today. But it didn't get released, and she was arrested. And I've seen part of the documentary. There's a couple places you can see that at. Maybe Gerard can talk a little more and get some information on that to you. But Millie Weaver, and again, we don't know exactly, but what we're hearing, we need to find this out because we need to get involved in this case. What we understand so far, and again, this is hearsay. We don't have knowledge either one way or the other. It's claimed that, first of all, that it was a very strange arrest because it was videotaped. I mean, when does a police officer ever come to your door, get the person that they're going to arrest, answer the door, tell the person that they're here to arrest them, and allow that person to go back inside their home and walk around unhandcuffed, okay? And until they take care of the whatever business they're doing in their home, then come back out, and then finally then make the arrest. I mean, what's that all about? It seems that the police officer that was making the arrest may realize that there's something wrong about this particular arrest. Now, what I understand is that they told her that she was indicted. But what I understand is her name was not on the indictment. I believe her husband's was, and I don't know what that's about, but that's what I heard. And so her name isn't even on the indictment, number one. And so they had no real charges. When she asked what the real charges was, well, we'll let you know when we get you to the station or whatever it was that they said. So they didn't tell her what the charges were. And it sounds like they didn't have any papers. Now, if she was a little more educated and realized these things, and I believe this was in Ohio, I think. And if she would have realized, and again, it depends on how educated her sheriff is, that if she would have called, because first thing I would have done is called my sheriff. I already know that my sheriff would come down and help me because he said so, he told me. And so if that is the case, the sheriff would come down to see if they have a valid warrant. Is there a sworn affidavit? Is it signed by a judge? Okay, because you need that sworn affidavit signed by a judge and the grand jury indictment, okay? So I would imagine the grand jury indictment, it may be sufficient without a sworn affidavit, but I don't know. I don't think so. I think you still need, again, I don't know. Maybe that's a question that Brent could answer, maybe better than I can. I do know that it talks of warrants and need to be served with sworn affidavit, and the warrant has to be signed by a judge. That I do know. And that, of course, is prior to an indictment. But in any event, it seems fishy here. We don't even know what she's been arrested for. And we need to get involved, and we're going to try to dig up the information and see if we can put some paperwork in for this, because What she was revealing in a documentary with some agents, people who worked for the government, whether they were contractors or agents of the government, past or whatever, in this documentary, they talk about the conspiracy against the people, ultimately, and ultimately the destruction of our government from within. So anyway, next question, I guess.
That's the end of the questions, John. There are no more.
Okay. All right. And there's no announcements or anything?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, let me just talk a few minutes on a few announcements. Again, we have a paper. When we write it up, it's going to be information. We're going to do it. We're going to try to do some series of information, very short papers, one or two pages, just to highlight certain things concerning. Gerard, you're not, muted?
No, okay,
You know, to highlight certain things that we've already told them about, and some things we may not have told them, but we're going to go through these things, and again, stick it and nail it to the doors of the United States Supreme Court. They are the responsible one. They need to clean house. They need to do mandamuses all the way down the line. They have a duty. They have a duty to do a writ mandamus down to all 94 federal district courts, telling them, make sure that people have access to courts of law. They don't do that. Why? They know that the courts of law have been shut down. They know that the common law courts don't exist anymore in their federal districts. And why doesn't the United States Supreme Court do something about that? Now, I do realize that courts need to be moved by the people, but they have a duty, and we have reported to them, and that's why they can't say they didn't know. We have already reported all these things to the United States Supreme Court. We've nailed the papers to their door. We've told them. So they're without excuse, and they're not acting. Okay? And it is their job to oversee these federal district courts. It is their job to make sure that they are operating properly. And whenever there is treason, then you report that you're told you must, if you discover treason, you must tell some judge or the governor or the president. You have to tell someone of high authority, and we have told the United States Supreme Court of many things going on that's treasonous, and they have done nothing. So they are guilty of failing to respond to protect the rights of the people. And one of the directives that all government has, and the Supreme Court is no different, they have a directive also, and that is secure the blessings of liberty. Right in the beginning, the six directives laid out in the preamble to the United States Constitution to make sure that they secure the blessings of liberty. They don't need to be told to do these things. If they see and they know that that liberty is being destroyed by the courts that they oversee, they have a duty to do something about it. They don't have to wait for someone to tell them, but we told them. They know, and they're without excuse now. And as soon as the deep state goes down, and if these people don't respond to all the papers that we've been filing and start to take serious all of the indictments, particularly through the Justice Department, and open up the courts of record, then we the people have no choice but to seriously consider to indicting those nine justices. And I don't even want to use the word to call them justices, because right now they should see enough to know that the deep state is losing its foothold. They're no longer really stuck between a rock and a hard place. They can start to act now, but they're not. But we'll wait and we'll see. Once the big arrests happen and finally there is no place for these evil people to hide, no rocks to hide under, and at that point in time, if the United States Supreme Court does not act, they need to be removed for bad behavior. And if Congress will not do it because they don't have the backbone, and unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, they're already in a conspiracy against our unalienable rights. All of the Democrats have been voting against the Second Amendment. All of them. I mean, how do they think that they have that power or authority to think that they can make a decision? Well, you know, we're deciding your unalienable right your unalienable right to protect yourself by bearing arms, and how can you be part of a militia if you don't have arms to be part of that militia? And how can you defend your borders if you don't have a military grade weapon? You know, but in any event, a lot of people need to be removed from office, and in my opinion, a lot of people need to go to jail. And I pretty much see all the Democrats, and there's some Republicans that have been sticking with them also. They need to go. Romney is one of them, senator, Republican senator, has betrayed we the people, and have been pushing to violate our unalienable rights. So, anyway, again, we're going to have to wait to really settle this all by when the deep state is fully eradicated. But anyway, that's the purpose of us pushing forward the power of the county sheriff here and getting a campaign for constitutional sheriffs. So last week we spoke a little bit about this, and we were putting up different things, you know, to donate for to save our republic to NLA's campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Let me click on that button there. And basically we explain what this is out. Join our campaign to educate our sheriffs by donating a copy of the book Government by Consent to your county sheriff. So we have it up there, the book right here. You can now click on this button to print out an order form. And on this order form, you can order a book for your sheriff. And you can order, if you want, you can order a book for yourself with the same paper. So you can do two books at one time. But we need to get these books to the sheriff. We need to educate these people. You know, we've tried to send papers to these sheriffs and to fax machines. We had faxes running, with 10 faxes running 24/7 for quite some time, sending paperwork, particularly to the sheriffs, but also to other elected individuals, and we weren't ignored. But, you know, if we get them a book, you know, people, you know, see something in a book, they think it has more authority or more power. After all, it's in a book, you know. A lot of books out there just have a lot of garbage in it, but generally people don't know one way or the other, at least the common person. But the bottom line on our book is we have many, many, many footnotes. Every statement we make, there is a footnote. Anything we talk about, we show the authorities, we show the source, where it comes from. It's undeniable. And so when a sheriff reads through that, or any elected, or anybody reads through that, and you see these things, and you see the, all the sources where this information is coming from, and what the authorities are, and what the law is, what the common law is, and you see these things, then you know you can believe, you can have faith, and with faith you can have a backbone, and with a backbone you can stand up for the Constitution. And that's what we need. We need to give our sheriffs that backbone. We need to give them that ability to step up with knowledge and make their statement concerning their protection of liberty. Right now they don't know what to say. We've talked with sheriffs that have told us that they don't know what the law is. They're not sure what the Constitution says here or there. They just don't know, because they, like most people, they've never been educated. They have removed a proper education from our schools. They don't teach civics. They don't teach the Constitution. They don't teach these things in school that everyone should know. They don't talk about the militia. Nothing. And so, you know, we've been deprived of the richness of our heritage, and we need to take it back. And it starts with giving the law enforcement officers, those who are there to protect our Constitution, to protect the rights of the people, and to make sure that we, the people, are not abused, and that the people in government obey the law, which is the Constitution, not to go outside their jurisdictions, and so on and so forth. But how can a sheriff do that if they don't know? So somehow we have to give this sheriff an education, a true education, a real education on the common law, which, of course, you know, our documents, our three founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. Those are all common law documents. They're built upon common law maxims. Truths that are undeniable. And so that's the purpose of the book. That's why the book was written. You know, again, on this book, we're not sure of the exact price, but I think $39 is going to be very close. You know, I did speak with my publisher concerning the price. I said, look, I need a price. We want to try to start get pre-sales and get this campaign we got going. And as of today, tomorrow I'm going to press them real hard. I need a real price. But in any event, I said, look, I'm selling a book right now for $39, and I'm expecting that that's going to cover, you know, shipping. Handling, shipping, and handling, and tax, and they thought, well, it may be a little more. They thought, but they weren't sure. So we're going to sell it for $39, and if it costs us $42 with the tax and everything, we'll eat the $2 or $3 on the book in order to get this through. You know, we're not in this for the money. We're not in it for the profit. We're in it for our nation. We're in it to save this country. To save our nation. But in any event, we're going to sell the book at this point. I think we have it at $39.95, which is $40. Yep, $39.95. And if it goes higher, then it'll go higher, but the people who paid the $39.95, then that's what we won't charge them anymore. We will seal the delivery of the book as soon as it's printed. So anyway, $40. You know, people can get together if they want. You can get 5, 10, 15 people in your county and get together $40. But $40 to get a book to your sheriff. Now, we do have a sheriff who is going to, we spoke a little bit to him about it, writing a paper, you know, a letter, sheriff to sheriff, that we will be putting in these books. So I'll talk with my publisher about that. We'll send him a printout of a letter, and attach a letter to every book that's delivered to a sheriff, and so that'll be helpful. And this sheriff is working with other sheriffs, and he's working nationwide. He's not just working in his own county or the counties next door. He's working in counties across the state, and he's also working with sheriffs in counties in other states, and getting the coalition. Together, a campaign, you know, for constitutional sheriffs. And this book plays a vital role. It's a cheap education. I mean, if we had to send each sheriff to a school to learn these things, it would cost a lot of money. And here we're giving them a book with everything they need. You know, we got everything in there. And again, you know, if you go back and look at the book, we did kind of briefly went over this. You know, of what is in this book, you know, Government by Consent is Chapter 1. Talks about a constitution, common law versus civil law, right to self-governance, and the rule of law. And Chapter 2 gets into the details of law, the origin of law. Chapter 3, American History. Again, there's a lot in this book. It covers a tremendous amount of subject matters. The grand jury and the petit jury on Chapter 4. Chapter 5, the history of the sheriff. A lot of things in there on the sheriff. Okay, the courts itself, Chapter 6. Chapter 7, an introduction to the founding documents. This is all about the founding documents, but it starts off with an introduction on Chapter 701 and 702, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution itself, the Article 1, a legislative power, and goes through Article 2, executive power, Article 3, judicial power, Article 4, to the states, concerning the states, Article 5, the amendments and ratifications, Article 6, the supreme law of the land, Article 7, ratification, and then Article 7 deals with the amendments. And so, you know, the book goes on. We get into great detail about the committeemen, the powers, the authorities, how they work with the sheriff, how they work with the locals, local government, and how they control who gets into office and so on and so forth. We put together a chapter on the militia, the necessity for a necessity to the security of a free state. And we have quite a few memorandums of law, which really gives a lot of insight on different subject matter. Jury nullification, for one thing. High treason. What is a court of record? The balance of power. Natural rights versus the civil rights. Sovereignty. Tax courts. USC 19. Title 19. I mean 18. Also, Chapter 11, we get into the detailed plan to save our republic. And of course, it's a combination of working the people working with the sheriff. Ultimately, this is the way we need to do this. And then, of course, we have the appendices that has a lot of papers in here. Now, the book, you know, right now is 703 pages, and I'm still waiting for the actual specific how many pages it's going to be, but I suspect it's going to be close to 1,000 pages, if not a little over 1,000. I might have to do something with these particular papers and just give maybe a place in the book where people can get those papers, but we're going to try to keep that in because that probably represents probably about 100 pages in here, at least. So the book, anyway, is 703, I think, or 700 and some odd pages, and that's 8.5 by 11, 12 font. 8.5 by 11.5, I believe that is, 12 font. The book is 10 font, and it's half the size of a sheet of paper, but it is 10 font. Our footnotes are 10 font, and I think the footnotes probably be probably an 8 font or a 9 font in the book. So there's a reduction in size on the one hand, but you can get less on a page. So I think the book's going to be about 1,000 pages. That's what I think. So it's a pretty hefty book. It covers a lot of subject matter, a lot of things. You know, the table of contents in itself will assist anybody to be able to, particularly a sheriff, to be able to find information on certain things very quickly. Okay? But what I'm going to do here is I think I'm going to post the introduction to the book, preface, I think it's pronounced preface, actually. But I'm going to probably put that up here. That's about 15 pages. I was thinking of putting part of it, but I think I'll put the whole thing up there. And people can read that because it really does give a good synopsis of the book. And I think it'll grab hold of anyone that has never even looked into these things as they start to read just through the preface to see this sort of synopsis of the book of what we're going to cover. I think it'll help draw the people to really want to look into this book because it's all about empowering the people. So we'll put that up there. Will there be a click a link or something that says preface and you'll be able to read it. And so anyway, we need to get these books to the sheriff. So please, everybody, get out there and buy a book for your sheriff. And as we say here, let me read this last paragraph. We did read this last week, but it should be read again. Our goal is to send a copy of the book, Government by Consent, to every sheriff in America. Please click and print out the form below. That's right here. Here's the form. You click that, it'll open up a PDF form, which you print out and just fill out the information and mail it to the address and send a check in for $39.95 for each book. And again, you can buy two books, one sent to you directly and the other one sent to your sheriff directly with a letter introducing it from another sheriff. So anyway, fill in your sheriff's information. Yeah, click on the print out the form below. Fill in your sheriff's information and send it with a check or money order in the amount of $39.95 to NLA, gives the address, and a copy of the book will be mailed to your sheriff. If someone else in your county has already sent a copy to your sheriff, we will use your funds to send a copy to a sheriff in a county close by. And we must educate all 3,133 sheriffs. And the people also, in order to secure our republic. Below is a table of contents of the book, Government by Consent. And again, I'm probably going to put the preface here too. So again, everybody, please, save up some money if that's what you have to do, and get $40, and let's educate your sheriff. Get $80 and educate yourself at the same time. Now, the other thing we're doing, and I had to borrow money to get this done through the publisher. You know, I'm on Social Security myself. I don't work. I haven't worked for quite some time, and I even took an early retirement to do what I'm doing here. And I spent a lot of money keeping things up and going until we finally got to the point where, you know, we're making enough money to be able to support pretty much most of what we're doing here. We're not in red anymore. But in any event, to get this book published, it's costing me $10,500. And one of the key things, and someone did send me an email correcting me on this, and I'll talk about the correction, but I had read about this that, you know, in order to get onto the best sellers list, generally speaking, you need to sell 5,000 books. And that generally, that'll put you into the best sellers list, usually for people who are known, but it could be for people who are unknown too. Depends on the book, and I think this is a book that might be one that we can say it depends on. We're looking to do 6,000 books. Now, someone sent me an email recently correcting me on that and telling me that there's more involved than that, and there very well may be, and I wouldn't doubt that. But nevertheless, our goal is to get 6,000 books sold before this even goes to print. So we want to do pre-sales. It's going to take until at least November and maybe December, but we're pushing hard on November to get these books starting to be printed and coming out. And but we do want to get pre-sales of 6,000 books. That will put us into a good position. You know, at that point, it should put us in the position where we should be able to get into the major book chains. And that's very important to do that, and into the libraries. Now, I know there is a game going on with these best-selling things, and, you know, you get someone that's in office, they write a book. First of all, you wonder how they write a book on some of these topics. What have they been doing that they can put so much time to write a book and get it done so quickly? Most of them have ghostwriters going, working with them, and they're really selling the book for under their name, but it's really for some, you know, really for the purpose of, shall I say, the deep state, ultimately, the powers that be, the assault upon our liberties. But in any event, they seem to get onto the best sellers list, like, as soon as it's coming out. Hannity just wrote a book and put it out, and the day he was going out, he's already on the best sellers list. He has pre-sales, okay? Well, you know, I remember he was interviewed. I don't remember the woman's name. Trying to think of her name on Fox. But in any event, she was talking with him a little bit about his book. And she said, I understand. You sold enough books already, and you're already in the bestsellers list. You know, how'd you do that? You know, and he never really answered that. He probably bought 5,000 books himself, you know, I would presume. I mean, if I could do that, I'd do that too. But in order to get that book out there. But anyway, we need to sell books. If we can get 10,000 books, it's even better. We need to sell books. The pre-sales need to go through. We need to be successful. And this is exactly what is going to give us critical mass. It's going to give us an educated sheriff. It's going to give us an education. And it's going to give us critical mass. And it's going to give us more authority and more leverage, okay, in what we're doing. So this is a very, very important thing. And again, you know, I've spent a lot of money supporting NLA myself until others are able to do this, and being on Social Security, and I spent a lot of my savings on a lot of things we do here. And, you know, and when this book's income coming in, I'm going to take a lot of that and put it right back in. I wrote three other books, and we're going to be a fourth of the book. They're small books. One's 40 pages, the other two 20 pages each, and another one's going to be probably 30, 40 pages. One is for petit jurors, one is for grand jurors, another one is for sheriffs and coroners and the administrators of the juries, and then there's going to be a fourth one, which I'm in the process of working on, which is a detailed day-by-day book of sort of regulations and the way things are done as far as being the administrators for the grand and trial juries. You know, we're working on getting four administrators in each county, which is a paid job, by the way. But once we take the courts over, it's the people that have to orientate the juries. It's the people that are going to make sure that the juries are protected and that they're not tainted by the judge or by the prosecutor. It is the sheriff that brings the case before the grand jury. Prosecutors are not permitted to bring a case before the grand jury. After all, they're going to get their ham sandwich. They already tell us that they've got a stacked jury. They've got the thing figured out, and they're going to get their indictment because they're going to tell their story the right way. Well, when the sheriff gets the information he's the one that's got to bring it to the grand jury. And if there's evidence that the person is not really guilty, because a lot of times they hide that stuff, then the sheriff may turn and say, "Hey, no, I'm not going to bring this to the grand jury. You know, look at this. There's more evidence that this is not the guy than there is." You know, but in any event, look, it's the sheriff's job to go to the grand jury, and it doesn't have to be the sheriff himself. Of course, it's someone within the sheriff's office. So there should be people trained in law that are handling these indictments or potential asking for indictments of the grand jury. And this will prevent, you know, all of the corruption because in the courts particularly, because the prosecutors are protecting the judges and the judges are protecting the prosecutors. There's a wink and a nod, and cases that should get through that don't get through, or refuse to go through, cases that go through that shouldn't go through, cases that should be where the person should be found innocent and they're found guilty time and time again. There's lots of innocent people in jail for all kinds of things. So this will prevent that and bring us back to courts of justice. And those four administrators in H County, it's their job to make sure that there is no corruption within that court system, within that county, that they're responsible for, to keep an eye on and to bring anything to the jury themselves, the grand jury themselves, of any corruption within the system. And, you know, in a criminal act, they should bring it to the sheriff to convince the sheriff to bring it to the grand jury. They should be doing the introduction of the case to the grand jury. So anyway, we the people have to take back our courts of law, and it's the people who control the courts of law. And this is one of the main things the books teach, is that we're sovereign. The judges should not be making decisions in law, only in equity. It has nothing to do with any kind of a criminal case. The judges are just really sort of traffic cops. They're magistrates, and they just make sure things move along, and they put the seal and the stamp and the signature at the end saying, "This is what the jury said. This is the solution," and pass it on for to the sheriff or whatever it needs to be done. And until we educate our sheriffs, and until we the people get ourselves educated, and until we get that critical mass, we're not going to be successful. And from watching what Trump is doing, I think he'll be right behind us on this, and listening to what he's been saying. You know, a lot of things he says a lot of things we talk about, and we kind of hope, or I think, that maybe he's hearing us. After all, we are copying in everything we do, along with Attorney General Barr before that, Sessions. Okay, so anyway, look at campaign for constitutional sheriffs. We need constitutional sheriffs. It's your job now to make sure that your sheriff gets educated. The other thing, again, is, as I mentioned, 10,500, and again, I had to go into debt a little bit to get the down payment. I had to put 5,000 down. So we're looking to really get our goal is 10,500. We haven't collected anything yet. We did make the announcement last week, but I didn't get this thing up there until just a few days ago. You know, that, what would you call that, sort of a thermometer here. Here's our goal, 10,500, and we haven't collected anything yet, so we're hoping that we can collect that. There are people out there that have the ability to pay this whole thing, and even half of it. And so anybody with a deep pocket, here's a good place to invest your money, to invest it in your future, to invest it in your children's future. Some people, if someone gives us $10,500, we'll just take this thing off and we'll just push the, you know, the sheriff's thing, the campaign for sheriffs. But we do need to collect money because in another month and a half, we got to come up with another $5,500. We only put $5,000 down, so we need $10,500. And we're acting in faith that we're going to collect $10,500. And we're also acting in faith that we're going to sell 5,000 to 6,000 books before that comes out to print. And that's your job. You need to do this. You need to get educated yourself. You need to get yourself a book, and you need to get yourself the sheriff a book. And if your income is that low, you know, get a couple people together and then save up money over the course of a month and buy yourself a book. This does a lot of things. It supports what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. It pays the bills, and it gives us an educated sheriff, and you get educated, and other people get educated, and we hit critical mass, and we win. Critical mass is the key to this whole thing. But education, critical mass without an education, you know, that's a problem too. The worst thing, you know, the worst thing in the world is to put a lot of ignorant people who have no idea what they're doing into places of authority and power. We're just back to where we started from. Ignorant people in place of authority and power, and they don't even know what they're doing. Anyway, if you click on this thing, it says, thank you for donating to help publish the book, Government by Consent. Once the book is published, we will send a copy of our book to President Trump, Vice President Pence, Attorney General Barr, United States Supreme Court, all nine justices, General Flynn, Representative Devin Nunes, Jim Jordan, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Chuck Grassley, Senator John Kennedy, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, Kellyanne Conway, McAnney, however her name is pronounced. You know, I was watching Bill O'Reilly recently. He had a pretty good program, you know, and he seems to be very calm. I guess he calmed down in old age, but he seems very much calmer. And he made a lot of sense and talked about, but he needs an education. You know, Bill O'Reilly has a great education, but he's ignorant, really, to common law and the court system and the real deep problems. So I'd like to send him a book. So Sean Hannity has turned out to be a pretty good guy and has really supported the president and has been doing some investigative journalism himself and gotten a lot of things out there to the general public, so to speak, those who watch Fox News, and he got the word out to them. But again, there's some ignorance there, and we need to straighten him up on his understanding. You know, they all fall apart when they try to deal with founding fathers and slavery, and we have a chapter on that. And let me tell you something. This nation was built on getting rid of slavery. Our founding fathers were all repentant of that. And isn't that the way it is in life? Aren't we all sinners, ultimately, in need of repentance? And don't we ignore repentance for a long time until we start to realize, hey, we shouldn't be doing this and we shouldn't be doing that? And then you have to repent and you change and you receive forgiveness if you're truly repenting. And you constantly struggle, you know, as Paul said, "Well, wretched man that I am." You know, you're constantly in a state of struggling, but you're constantly turning to that repented. And our founding, as a nation, is nothing different. All nations have evil in them. They do a lot of evil things, all nations, and the United States is no different. But our founding fathers, we were founded upon all men are created equal. And nothing could be further from the truth that the greatest defender, the greatest champion against slavery is Thomas Jefferson. And yet he is the one built, who was really destroyed the most. Okay, but he, I don't know if I'm coming through. I see on my paper, am I coming through? Because I'm looking here and I see no active speaker. Could be just my page here. Will we shut down? Anyone hear me?
I hear you fine, John. I've been listening all along. I think you're all right.
I see active speakers came back up again. Yeah. All right. So we're going through. But anyway, we need to really get the education out there. I'm kind of lost my place here, but we need to get the education out here. So we're going to send it to all these people, this books to all these people, and our 3,000 plus county sheriffs. You know, we got 3,133 counties out there, you know, not all of them have a sheriff. Some of them unlawfully don't have a sheriff, and some counties, practically nobody lives in, so there are places that are that rural, and they may not have a sheriff. But generally speaking, there's well over 3,000 sheriffs in the United States. We need to get our book out to them. We need to educate them. So So make your checks payable to National Liberty Alliance and mail it to National Liberty Alliance, and the address is there. And again, just fill in who's it from, and if you don't want to fill that in, that's fine. But the amount of the donation enclosed, and mail it in. And again, if we get a couple of big checks that can cover the $10,005, we'll take that down and we'll push all monies over to ordering of the books for the sheriffs. We also want to take a list and get books to certain governors. We don't want to waste our time on the enemy. You know, socialists are socialists. We're not going to change their mind. But those people who are not socialists, governors that are good, and we have people in different legislative bodies in different states, they're really some good people. They just don't know the law. They don't know common law. They don't know how the court system should operate and things, how things should go. They don't know the power and the authority of the sheriff. So we need to get this book to those people, too. So this is going to be an ongoing campaign until we get the book into all of these good people. But I want to tell you, I was doing research today, and as I mentioned I was very surprised. Just about every Democrat, I don't think there was one Democrat that stuck up for the Second Amendment. And that's the only thing I looked at so far. I got to look at the other issues. You know, they are assaulting our Bill of Rights. They took an oath to protect it, and they are now, they are campaigning on a platform to remove the Bill of Rights. We, the people, ordained and established these things. Who are these people that think that they can come and take, and God gave us these rights? They're unalienable. It's God-given. It's the blessings of liberty, and they are trying to take the blessings of liberty away from us. That is treason. That is high treason. High treason is worthy of death. And we sit here and allow these people to do this. These people should be in jail. So we need to do something. We need to save this nation. We need to get this campaign off the ground. People need to be writing checks out tonight and getting them in the mail. We need to save this nation. Trump cannot do it alone. He can set the stage. He can get things ready. But it's the people that have to take control. It is the sheriffs that have to enforce the law and make sure that our liberties are not abused or denied, and that due process is available to everyone. And we got to stop paying all this money to get into a court. You know, there's been cases, literally a case that I had run some years back, a couple of years ago, when I was doing an IRS case. I had to file my case three times. I had to pay $410 on the federal level. So over $1,200 I had to pay to finally get my case into the court. You know, they just keep throwing you out. And they don't give you any good reason. You know, rule 12, you're out, you know. Anyway. Only the people can save America. That's about all I got to say about that. So please, anybody with big dollars, let's get rid of this thermometer on the right side of the website. If not, let's go to the widow's mite. $5, $10, $50, $100, whatever you can afford. Write those checks, get it going, get a money order. We're not doing anything by credit card with these two projects, mostly because I don't want that money to get mixed in. We'd have to set up a whole new system. Plus, it costs money. Every time we collect money, it costs money, you know. So we have a program on our website that works with the credit cards, and that costs money. The gateway into the from the credit card service into the bank account also costs money. We don't want any of this money to go anywhere but for its purpose. And also, we want to keep it separate. It'll go in. We opened a different account for this purpose to put this money in, sort of an escrow account. It's not an escrow account per se, but that's how we're treating it as such. And let's save America. I guess that's all I got to say. Are you about ready to take the mic there, Brent? And Gerard, are you ready to take control of the board here before we open up for questions? If you're talking, you have to unmute yourself.
I'm trying. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so you're ready in a minute. Okay, I'll get to you in a minute. Gerard, are you ready?
Yeah. Oh, I'm
do I have to be? You were going so good. You were going so good there.
Please save America. Look at, I'm begging. I'm begging the people. I don't know what. Look at, we have to do something. Things go slow. I know that times are tough. I know money's tough. Hey, but this is well worth investment. It's investment in your future. It's investment in your liberty. It's investment in your children, your family, your friends, your neighbors. It's an investment in America. It's an investment to the patriots. It's an investment that we have to make. So, okay, Gerard, are you ready to take control of the panel after I introduce Brent?
Can you hear me?
Unfortunately.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. All right, Brent Winters is going to talk to us. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. He's also got a militia book out there you can find on the right-hand side of our website. And by the way, one other thing, let me say, on this, on the right side, and Carl, you put it in a good place. I originally was going to have this underneath this information here, but Carl put it above that. So as soon as you come to the website, you see the book here. Click here for the book and details on a pre-order book for estimated release November 2020. And if you click on that also there, that's where you come to just buy a book, okay? And again, on these all these pages, we'll be putting the preface there. But here you can fill out your information and send in for a book. You know, what I might do is I'll probably put it, I'm going to redo this page, although you can buy books right now. But if people want to buy more than one book, you know, well, I guess you could just write, purchase extra books at $39.95 each. Okay, yeah, you can purchase already as many books as you want, so it doesn't have to be one. It's already written up that way. So anyway, let's get the book. Let's get educated. Let's get this campaign for constitutional sheriffs going. Let's get our sheriffs educated. We're going to be working with a group of sheriffs that are going to be organizing other sheriffs, bringing them into the fold, so to speak, of the Constitution. And Brent's out there already working with some of these people. Matter of fact, this past weekend he was out at a rally, or I don't know what you would call it, but they had quite a few people outdoors sitting down and listening to one of the sheriffs. Dara was talking, and Brent had a time to talk a little bit, and they were pumping up the things we're doing. We need to get out there and get behind them. We need to work to help to get these sheriffs educated and prime them up and get them so that they can be brought together and start discussions among themselves on a national level, sheriff to sheriff, concerning the Constitution, concerning the things that they're doing to protect their people. So they have a place to go and share and do things. And we will provide that platform for them. So let's do it. Okay, Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the board. And anybody who wants to get into the queue, *6, to get into the queue, *6 and 1, I believe it is. Brent?
Thank you. I'm here. Yes, we did go to Michigan and meet a lot of Michiganders. A versatile place, Michigan. We went to the state capitol. We were on the lawn of the state capitol of Michigan in the town of Lansing, Michigan. Patriots there had set up a platform up on the steps of the capitol with a little sun shade there, and they asked about, I'd say there were 25 people that were asked to speak. 25, probably. And then they said to me, you're going to be the end of the line, and you can sum up what they've said. Well, if I was going to sum up what they said, that meant that I probably ought to try to listen to all of them. Nobody listened to all of them, but I did, because I thought I didn't want to miss anything. I was sitting in an easy chair, and I had books there. People were buying books. When you have political meetings, though, this was a political rally. Political. It was about what was going on in politics. This wasn't a Sunday school convention. And when you have a political meeting, we have weird people at Sunday school conventions. But when you have political meetings, you can get a lot of weird people. And they were there. I won't tell you about all of them. You've met that kind of, maybe you're one of them. I don't know. Maybe you think Maybe you think I'm one of them. Well, whatever the case, I tried to sum it up at the end in about 15 minutes, and that really wasn't possible. But Sheriff Darleaf was there, and he said quite a few things of great importance. And what I see in all of this is the increased visibility of the sheriff. We can't do everything. We can't throw all the scum out of office, put decent folk in, reestablish the country, get rid of the idea of this scare tactic, this terrorism they're trying to put on us with this so-called virus. We can't do everything. What can we do? We can't control the State House. We can't control the White House. We can't control the courthouse. What can we do? Well, we can do, each of us, we can do right. I'm telling you, there is no other option. There is no other plan. There is no other plan except you doing what you ought to do. But the problem is, all of us, to varying degrees, are ignorant to what we're supposed to do at any given moment. Now, don't downplay this. It's easy to have moral outrage about what's going on outside of your realm of influence, and then you scream and holler about it. Well, it's all right. It's not all right. It's necessary that you say you don't agree. By the way, if you don't say that, the Bible says when the hell falls on them for doing what they're doing, it'll fall on you too if you don't pipe up now. Pipe up. What does that mean? That means make it obvious to people. You don't have to be belligerent. Just say, no, I'm no part of this. I do not agree. I'm not budging in my opinion. No. No. 1,000 times no. Say no. Stand fast. Well, in the midst of all this madness, what's the problem? I'll tell you what the problem is. You can characterize it in several different ways. But one of the ways, you know, you've heard me say, for instance, the only remedy for lawlessness is true law. The only remedy for lawlessness is true law. That's true. That's true. There is no other remedy. But again, the problem looms again. You're ignorant. I'm ignorant. We're all ignorant to varying degrees about what the true law says and how it applies in any given situation. And as long as you're ignorant of that, often said here, John often quotes Tom Jefferson when he said, if you think you can be ignorant and free, you're hoping for what is not and never will be. Now, I know I didn't say it exactly the way he said it, but it was something like that. At least I got the rhyming words in there. Well, then people turn around and say, well, then education is the answer. And I say, no, education is not the answer. The right education is the answer, but the wrong education is the problem. Well, there's plenty of education going on. Schools everywhere, been schools all over America. Listen, if education were the answer, the university campuses through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s would have been the most squared away, productive, moral places on the planet. But they weren't and still aren't. What are they? They're sewage pits. Sewage pits where folks see how much they can, how much booze they can imbibe and how many girls they can bed and how much pot they can smoke. That's been the idea. And how many crazy professors they can hire that teach the premises of the evil empire. Well, education, see, just to say education is the answer and getting rid of ignorance, no, there are a lot of people know a lot of things. It's just the wrong stuff. An educator told me once when I was a political creature, I was running for office. He got me aside. He was a doctor of education. He wanted to meet with me at a restaurant. So we met at a restaurant. He said this. He said, America cannot stand very much more miseducation. America cannot stand very much more miss education. Well, I get what he's saying. We're seeing the end result of all of it now, again, through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. It's not unusual now to go to a university campus in an otherwise comparably conservative state like, for instance, Montana, and meet college students by the wagon load that are proclaimed Marxist. How do I know? Because I've been to those places and met those young people. Marxism. Did Reagan whoop Marxism? I don't think so. The USSR said they went down. But Marxism? We call it Marxism because Karl Marx, he's the one that promoted the idea in modern times. What did he say? Here's what he said. Listen, now listen to this. Marx, of course, was a no-load. His daughters all, well, they'd all, if all five of his daughters did commit suicide, a majority of them did. I don't remember. It was just such a mess. How come? Well, because Karl Marx said he was going to save the whole world. That's what he said. Well, he lost his family in the meantime. They went to hell in a handbasket because he was going to save the whole world. Listen, if you're out to save everybody, you're going to save nobody. Just like the maxim that says, what everybody owns, nobody owns. You try to do everything, you're trying to usurp the place of God, trying to save the whole world. Don't work. You'll lose even that which you have. But again, coming back to what I call the Noah principle, Noah didn't try to save the whole world, didn't concentrate on that at all. What did he try to do? And the Newer Testament stresses this even more. Peter the Apostle says it. He concentrated on saving 8 souls. Who were they? His family. Mrs. Noah, 3 sons, and their 3 wives. That makes 8. He concentrated on saving them, and it was a full-time job for a number of decades to make it happen, by the way. And that was one big boat, about as big as an aircraft carrier. By the way, I think he put it together with pins and dowels, not nails. Why do I think that? I'll tell you why I think that. I have very good reason. I got to drop this footnote. Well, pins and dowels where you drill holes in timbers when you put them together and frame things up. You drill a big hole about anywhere from 3/8 of an inch to 1/2 inch, and you drive a wooden pin in there that goes in and holds those two joints of timber together, the frame. A lot of old barns built that way where I come from. No nails in them, none at all, just these dowels. They drive them in. They used to drive them in with large wooden mallets. One time we tried to pull one down with a 4020 John Deere. 4020 John Deere, that was a big tractor at one time. So big it was scary. They look little now, don't amount to much. But boy, it was big then. My brother and I were going to pull one of those barns down. And the reason we're going to do it was that word was out the legislature was going to tax every building on your place. So people were out tearing down old buildings. We were going to tear that old barn down, and it was all used up, and sides coming off of it. But the frame was still there. I climbed up to the very top where that rail is that brings the hay into the haymow, way up there. I hooked a steel cable to it with a clevis. I threw the cable down. It was a heavy cable. Threw it down, way down. I climbed down to the floor of the hay mow and on down the ladder into the feedway and came out. We hooked the clevis up on the 4020, and I told him to ease forward. He was my little brother. And he put her in Grandma and started easing forward. He pulled that barn clear down as far as he could pull it. pulled it down to where it's just right down on the ground. And then I said, okay, Wes, ease her up. So he put her in neutral and let up on the brake. And that barn, which was pulled clear down at the ground, just slowly started coming back up again till it was almost vertical again. That's the way those pin and dowel timbered barns are. I believe Noah's Ark was that way. He didn't have any, I bet he didn't have any nails in it, because if it didn't have any nails in it, it could twist as the troughs and the crests of the waves pitched and rolled, and that way it wouldn't break apart. You know, things are have little elasticity to them, they won't bust up. Well, that's just a footnote of an observation, but Noah did not try to save the world. He tried to save his family. Tried to mind his own business. You say, well, he preached for 120 years. Well, that's just because he was trying to save his family. If you're paying attention to those to whom you care for, those to whom you know, as we say, kith and kin, friends, neighbors, and relatives, you pay attention to them, you'll have more impact than if you try to save the world. Much more, immeasurably more. Well, couldn't resist saying that. Marxism is a bunch of pimpsqueaks trying to save the world. It's not going to happen. What will happen instead? They will destroy the building block, the nucleus of all things. I've known people from communist countries through the years, my age, that came to the United States. And we had long discussions, and I discovered that the one thing that the communists over there in Russia wanted to do away with was any ties of community, any ties of family, none at all. Nobody caring for anybody. Of course, it all came to an ugly end. A lot of children in Russia yet today, lots, no, millions, running the streets without parents and being abused, being trafficked. You think trafficking's bad here? It's bad here. You can't imagine what it's like over there, where they haven't had, where all of the women were driven into the workforce by law. Nobody watching the children. Men working, women working. All the children shoved off into a daycare center or an orphanage or something. The state will take care of your children. The state will take care of you. And that's what it's like, and that's what we're facing now. Well, I want to just mention, who is this enemy? What are they thinking? Now, people say, well, that sounds like a whole lot of theory. I'm going to tell you some things that some of you are going to say, that's a whole lot of theory. Well, I won't hide it. I'm taking this information from Appendix 9 of 123 appendices of the winterized version of the Bible. And this particular appendix is called Emperor Worship. You say, well, we haven't got any emperors here. Oh, is that right? You haven't got any emperors here in America? No, not in America. Well, what do you think these governors think they are? These governors issuing decrees and calling them enforceable law. I went into a courthouse today. I'd never experienced what I experienced today. A judge sitting on the bench with a diaper on his face. A plexiglass, no kidding. I'm not kidding you. A plexiglass, a plate of plexiglass in front of him, a plate of plexiglass beside him, and a diaper, a muffler on his face. And I'm supposed to understand what he's saying? I couldn't make out a word. And then witnesses, watch this, witnesses on the witness stand with a diaper over their face. The judge wouldn't let them take the diaper off their face to testify. Couldn't understand a word they were saying. Oh, you pick one up once in a while. But without context, if you don't get them all, you're not understanding a word they're saying. Because a text taken out of context is a pretext. That's all I was getting was pretext. I'd have to assume or presume what they were saying. Is that a public trial? Answer, no. A public trial has to be an oral trial. Have we gone stark, raven, mad? And the answer to that question is yes. That's my conclusion. There's such a grand delusion, over the whole world, but I'm thinking of my own country, my own community. I can see it, people arguing in support of wearing face masks. Well, I want to say to people, I'm not that stupid, but I don't want to insult them unnecessarily. I don't make arguments about whether it's healthy or unhealthy. If you can't tell it's unhealthy, there's no sense arguing with you. You're not persuadable. I've learned that some people just aren't persuadable. Why? Because they're blind as a bat, mentally blind as a bat. Oh, they could be very smart, know a lot, but never, able to come to a knowledge of the truth, as the Bible puts it. Well, what's the problem? We got these governors that think they're emperors. That's what the problem is. What's an emperor? An emperor is an imperial ruler. What's an imperial ruler? Imperial, emperor, those are all the same rooted words. It means command, commanding, ordering. Yeah, we're talking about decrees. Absolute finality of judgment attributed to any mere man is emperor worship. Let me say it one more time. Absolute finality of judgment attributed to any mere man or womb man is emperor worship. Yeah. Well, when these governors say, that's it. No, I don't care what the legislature says. I don't care if it orders me to stop because it's unlawful. I don't care what the Constitution of our state says, whatever state you're in, that if it says that the governor has no lawmaking power, I don't care, they say. I don't care. I am giving a finality of judgment. And we're to attribute that finality of judgment to him? That's called emperor worship. And it is a species, what's this, of idolatry. Idolatry. What is idolatry? Mark this one down. This is idolatry. Idolatry is attributing finality of judgment to a created thing. Idolatry. We're talking about government here. Idolatry is all about government, the false government. It's always idolatry. What is idolatry? Attributing finality of judgment to a created thing, such as a man or a woman. That's idolatry. An angel. A cow, like they do over on the other side of the world. Or a bird. Or a tree. Or you cut a tree down, carve it up, make a totem out of it. Then attribute, then fall down before it, as the prophet says in the Bible. Fall down before it and pray. Or make it out of stone and fall down before it and pray. Deaf, dumb, blind. That's idolatry, because you're attributing the power of God, of the true lawgiver, to some created thing, whether it's a created thing that God has created, living or dead, or something you helped him create. Throughout history, people have carried out emperor worship, calling it by many names. In all cases, it nevertheless at bottom amounts to the same thing. One's receiving the conscience and will of another in place of the disciplined use of one's own conscience. If you are receiving the conscience and will of another in place of the disciplined use of your own conscience, you are an idolater. No question. You say, where are you getting this, Brent? I get it from two places. The laws of nature are unwritten in the nature of things. I read history. I see what happened, just the facts of the matter. And the laws of nature is God, written in the Bible. That's where I get it. You see it over and over and over. God's smiting of the Babylonian settlers, the settlers of the city of Babylon, with the frustration of a confused tongue, had scattered them, along with their notions of emperor worship, and some of this Babylonian stock settled among Rome's founding families. Rome's founding families, the year 753 B.C. About 300 of them. We don't know exactly how many, but there were about 300 from what we can read. The Etruscans then offered academic prestige to these Roman families, and smitten with scholastic pride, the latent spores of emperor worship germinated. It went all over the world, and we're still now battling it in America. Well, the cult continues. I call it the imperial cult. Why do I call it the imperial cult? Well, that's what historians have called it for a long, long time. The cult continues. Lenin, John Lennon, not John Lennon, but the Lenin, the other one, in Russia during the revolution. Louis XIV's idea. He said, "Moi, me." What's that? I think in French that means me. I just know what I read. He said, "I'm the state. I am the state." Yeah, I'm the final decider of right and wrong. I give finality of judgment. Mao Zedong, communist dictator of China, demanded the following title. Listen to this. He whose mind created the world. That pimpsqueak? Yeah, that pimpsqueak. He whose mind created the world. That's what he wanted to be called. And this Nicolae Ceausescu, again, I don't know how to pronounce it, but he was that fellow that was the communist dictator of Romania. Maybe you remember. They finally, when they overthrew the communist state there, they hung him. And his wife, if I'm not mistaken. He said this. He said he wanted to be deified. So they acted like he was. Of course, Kim Il-sung, or Sung, S-U-N-G, same thing, dictator of North Korea. No public worship is allowed in North Korea except of him. He is their god. Well, they act like he is, I'll put it that way. Well, it's better than getting shot in the head, executed. Emperor worship, that's what we're facing here. It's always the same. It's always the same. It's not different anywhere where the evil empire goes, the law of the city. It's always emperor worship. They don't always call him an emperor, but that's what he is. Hitler was called something different, but he was emperor. He was emperor. The czars of Russia were called Caesar. They were emperors. Then when the communist state came, the political boss. He was an emperor, although they didn't call him that. They called him the boss, because he was the boss of the party. Now we got these governors in America, and they're saying, "You can't even take my decision to court." By the way, I'm going to shut the courts down by as a matter of de facto fact, because I'm going to put out a decree, y'all got to wear diapers on your heads when you go into a courtroom. Do people stop to consider, just on the surface, how stupid it is? That's what we're doing. Okay, one more, a little bit more here. Emperor worship, before spreading, had originated at Babylon. Now, watch this. As shepherd hero worship. I'm going to have a little word study here. Camp on this just a second, then we'll quit. Shepherd hero worship. Our English word hero, H-E-R-O, is of Babylonian origin, Semitic origin, ancient Eastern Semitic origin, and throughout history has carried this law of the city concept of the semi-deified emperor. Now watch. It stems from the old Semitic word ro with the definite article, which is the letter he. The word is ro, which means shepherd, and the definite article, hey. So the Semitic people, this is an ancient word, they pronounced it Hero or Hera'a, different dialects, but the consonants are always the same. It means the shepherd. You've seen pictures of the Pharaoh of Egypt. They didn't call him Emperor, they call him Pharaoh. And he has two shepherd's crooks in his hand, one for Lower Egypt, one for Upper Egypt. Well, what did that mean? That meant that he was the shepherd, Hero. Hero. What do they call the Greek gods? They call them, we still call the heroes of Greece. The shepherds, the ones that take care of everybody. Bill Clinton said, the American people elected me to take care of them. I almost gagged when I heard him say that. I heard him say it. I said, well, he's not hiding it. That's the law of the city. That's the evil empire. And by the way, that is Antichrist. That is an Antichrist who says that he is the shepherd, as many, many throughout the centuries have said. Is it any wonder then that Jesus Christ said, the Greek text is emphatic, I am the shepherd. He was spitting in the face of the evil empire when he said that. He wasn't spinning off words, and they knew exactly what he was saying. I am the, not a shepherd, Hero, the shepherd. And by the way, he's the only one that is worthy of that title. The only one. The man of God's own choosing. The God-man, I should say, of God's own choosing. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. He never said that about anybody except Jesus Christ. And by the way, if you're not in him, you're doomed. You're done. It's all over but the crying, boys and girls. Well, that's what Hero is, and that's what these folk, these Pisciani governors, are claiming to be. And they're spitting in the face of Jesus Christ when they do that. God help us. God help us. You know that fellow that wrote that book, Tragedy and Hope, he was the mentor of Bill Clinton. Tragedy and Hope. He was a liberal. Liberal, that's not a good word. That's a misnomer. He was a wacko, left-wing wacko from Georgetown University, the Jesuit college down there in around Washington, D.C. He said Germanic man. Germanic man had something. They had something in their culture that enabled them to come back to center if they wanted to. What was it? Oh, they were enamored with Rome, yes, after the fall of the Roman Empire, and got caught up with that. But they had this, he said. They had the Hebrew notion. The Hebrew notion and the Hebrew book. The book of the Hebrews. The Bible. They had that in their culture. And because they had the Bible in their culture, and it was eventually Martin Luther translated it into English. Same thing happened in England. Same thing happened all over Europe eventually. In Switzerland. In France. In Italy. The Bible was translated into the native tongue of the people. And when that happened, they had in their culture, said Quigley, that was the author of that book, they had in their culture a limiting factor to the governments of men. Without the Bible, there is no limiting factor to the governments of men. None! That's why you see these useful idiots of the evil empire, these governors and these attorney generals, claiming that they are God. They are imperator. We cannot question their word. No matter how stupid and ridiculous and destructive their commands. Well, let him that has ears hear. That's just one way to recognize this idea of emperor worship. Yeah, worship. Worship. That's idolatry, attributing worth worthy ship. These people are worthy. No, they aren't. They are not only unworthy, they're the worst of the lot. This is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own, but as always, I like to say that the leadership at National Liberty Alliance is kind enough to let me say a few words. Please join us on Saturday mornings. We're teaching due process. Go to commonlawyer.com. You can see there how to participate. It's evergreen. You can join any, you know, at any point in the process on the class of due process, any point as we move along, and you can see how to do that and how to participate. Gerard, if you're there, my friend.
I am. Thank you, Brett. I want to just, before we go on to...
Oh, by the way, Gerard, your screen is paused. I don't know how you did that. I've never seen that before.
Well, I'll just unpause it.
How did you do that? How do you do that?
Let's see. You hit share, and then you hit resume screen sharing. I want to share my screen. You had yours shared, and I didn't realize it, and I was.
That's okay. No, when I stop speaking, you can share yours, and it'll kick mine off, and that's okay.
Okay, I didn't think it went, but anyway, before we.
But you should always try to keep something up there, maybe, you know. So usually I leave. If I don't have anything, I'll leave the front page. But good.
Well, I just wanted to share this quick because, being that. Let's see, select items to share, that Brent had to bring up the diapers on the faces here. Let me see here. It's not working, square screen. Let me just start over again because something's wrong. We recently got in contact with a group out in Colorado, and the one girl there, this Julie Forty, is one of her big thing is the mask that she's fighting, and happens to be one of my pet peeves also. But she's started a site that's very, very good, and I want to introduce people to it just so they know where it is and they can get information and they know what to do about it. So I'm gonna. Here. Okay, I guess it's sharing. I'm going to assume it is. Is it sharing, John? You see the face mask studies there? Can't tell.
Yep, they're there.
Yep, okay. I can see it.
Okay, this is her.
Brent, you might want to mute your mic. We're getting sort of a bubbly thing or something.
Let me try it. Thanks. Hang on.
So anyway, this is called Keep Colorado Free and Open, and she has a lot of information here on face masks, but what I found really good was if you come over here to the face mask playlist, and this is wixsite.com. Of course, she's got /freedom/face-mask-facts-studies. I don't know, maybe we could put this up on the website for people, our website, so that people can link it. But you come down here, and I had a big pet peeve with Walmart, who is, as far as I'm concerned, they're like the Borg. Resistance is futile. Anybody that ever watched Star Trek will know what I'm talking about. And she's got a lot of, you know, look at that, we got Fauci over here without his mask on, you know, and but anyway, I'm going to click this, and you'll see a list of videos, okay? And some of these I've sent around to people. Well, this one here, they probably took off. They didn't like, somehow they didn't like it, or I don't know where it is. But this bottom one, Walmart mask rule defeated. And this talks about the commercial liability and how to use it. When Walmart requires their customers and their employees to wear masks, they've opened themselves up for commercial liability. And don't let them tell you, and this guy goes in with a camera. Well, his wife went in and they gave her trouble and she called him up and he and he kind of talked her through it on the phone, and then he went back the next day, and he called corporate, and boy, were they backing up, because they don't have the right to tell you to wear a mask. And anybody I've looked into the OSHA standards on masks, and the worst mask you could wear is the one that they're telling us to wear, which is the cloth-based mask, because that's the one that collects the most moisture, the most mold, the most bacteria. People are getting staphylococcus on the face. Dentists are calling it mask mouth, because people come in with this horrible breath and rotten things going on in their sinuses and in their teeth from the mask. Well, wearing a mask will definitely lower your immune system, and that's why Fauci wants you to wear it, because when we take them off, he wants another surge in the virus. Now, people are going to get sick, and it may not even be with COVID, but the whole human condition is that we're social beings, and we're supposed to breathe on each other. We're supposed to exchange this stuff, because that's what keeps our herd immunity up. That's how it works. And when we stop socializing, we start social distancing, which, by the way, is not a scientific thing. That was done at a high school science fair, but they like it because they know that it serves a lot of purposes as far as keeping us apart, because they're trying to take our First Amendment rights to assemble, and one of the things is to keep us socially distant, okay, and make us scared to talk to each other. Now, I'm going to tell you something that I discovered in my research. These things they've been calling viruses, well, there's something called exosomes. And when the scientists first saw them, they thought they were viruses. And what they were is they were coming out of cells. The cell was pushing them through the cell wall. And what they were is they were part of a virus that was encapsulated, that the cell had pushed off, that the body's immune system had isolated, put a cast around it, and you breathe it out. Well, if you breathe it against a mask, you know, any of these bacteria and stuff, what you're doing is you got a petri dish on your face. You're giving it a chance to grow more and come back in, and so you reinfect yourself. But when those exosomes come out, and they were calling them viruses, and they are not viruses, they are the result of somebody's body fighting a virus. Well, if they sneeze on you or cough on you and you get this exosome into your lung, you just got a vaccination. Because what's a vaccination? The scientist takes the pathogen and he weakens it so that it's not the full thing, and then he gives it to you. Well, that exosome that's surrounding that virus has half killed it, and you're getting that virus at its half kill strength, which gives your body a chance to build antibodies against it without it being in its full capacity. So you may only get a sniffle, but now you're immune to it. And Fauci knows this. That, look at the model he's using with this mask and stuff. It's an old model. It's an 1800s model, and they know it doesn't work. Even in 1912, when they had the pandemics, they did studies on masks. And what they found was there was no difference in the infection rate between who wore masks and who didn't. And if they really kept tight records, they'd probably find out people that wore masks got sicker quicker. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to keep a virus from infecting you with a cloth mask or with any kind of mask, as far as that goes. When you see scientists working on viruses, what do they have? They have on a positive pressure suit. They have a suit that blows airs in. It looks like a spacesuit. It's plastic. It covers the whole body, the face, everything, and you're enveloped in air that's being pumped in, fresh air, and nothing can get into that suit because it's positive pressure. What makes you know, this business of wearing a mask is such a fraud. We know it. The scientist knows it. The science knows it. And all of a sudden, we've transported our senses and our common sense back 200 years, and they were actually smarter then than they were now, because during some of the pandemics back then, the kings and the queens and stuff, they didn't catch them because they used to use essential oils. They used to use frankincense, and they used to use oregano oil and all these things that still work, and they put them around them, and it would kill the virus. It would keep it from them getting it. They're not even telling us to do that. They're telling us to make ourselves sicker. So anyway, long story short, Walmart is not, first of all, don't ever let them tell you that Walmart is a private organization, and because they are, they can tell you that you can't do this or you can't do that. They are not. They receive about $7 billion a year in tax dollar subsidies. That makes them a public place. And any place that's a corporation is running a store, is a public place. They can't tell you, we're private, we can make our own rules. It's true if you got a DBA working and if somebody wants to say, you know, you can't come in here unless you have proper attire, they're perfectly well to do it. Even if they say you got to have a mask on. Look, if you're Muslim and they want you in your full garb, that's their business. You just don't go in there. But a store like Walmart or Stewart's, one of these franchises that's nationwide all over the place, they're not a private business. I'm sorry. And they are bound by the rules of discrimination. So when you go in and they want you to wear a mask, I would just say, I'm sorry, I have a condition that precludes me from wearing a mask. That's it. They cannot ask you any more questions. They can't ask you what your condition is. They can't ask you if you have a doctor's note. That violates the Persons with Disabilities Act and HIPAA. And that alone, just them asking you that question is a major lawsuit. If they refuse you service because you don't have a mask on, that's another lawsuit. That's a double lawsuit. You know, I called Walmart and I said, look, I wanted to find out about this business of them not having change and they're not wanting to accept cash. And I checked with all the banks in the area and I asked them if there was a coin shortage. Well, Walmart jumped the gun in this area. There was no coin shortage, but they were claiming there was a coin shortage. And when I called the banks, we said, is there a coin shortage? They said, nah, that's some baloney that was put in the papers. It's a rumor. And so I called up to find out, and I did get the girl. But while I was waiting for the girl, they had this big, long mask thing on that I had to sit there through the automated machine. And they said, oh, you got to wear a mask and this and that and the other thing. And so when she finally picked up the phone, I said, you know, I had a question about the coin thing, because I was going to say, look, you better accept cash. And they tell you that you can round it up and give the difference to charity. How about you round it down and give the difference to me? But anyway, that's besides the point. And they said, oh, it's not every register and it's not every store and it's up to the manager and blah, 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 and all this baloney. Of course, I went to the bank here a few weeks ago and now I see a sign we're having a nationwide coin shortage. That has something to do with the money reset, I believe. Some other people are saying that they got trackers inside the money and they want to take it out. I don't know if I believe that. They showed a thing on dry ice, how you break the coin apart, but it looked very like magic to me. They didn't show everything, so I don't believe that. I believe that coins hold their value and they need to take them out. It's not like paper money. It's not easy to remint coins. And so what happens is, if you got coins, I would save them because they're going to be worth more. They're going to be worth face value no matter what they do with the money. So what happens is it's a hedge against inflation, okay? But again, I digress. As far as the mask thing goes, boy, I went far afield on that one. They cannot require you to wear a mask. They can't ask you a question about what your condition is and whether or not you have a condition. And you really do have a condition that precludes you from wearing a mask. We all do, because it's dangerous to anybody. And so that condition is health. But you don't tell them that it's health, but that's what it is. Because if you wear a mask, eventually you're going to get sick. The only people that should be wearing masks, and the only people that I ever saw wear masks around here, is people that have been through cancer treatments, that have no immune system, and they don't want to pick anything up. So they temporarily put a mask on when they're out in public. But they're not walking around with it 24/7. They don't want anybody sneezing or coughing on them because they have no immune system. See, normally, it's not a bad thing to have somebody sneeze or cough or breathe on you, because that's how your body keeps herd immunity. you mask everybody up, and then we all come out and we start exchanging these viruses, you're going to catch every single thing that you come in contact with, because you just lowered your immunity. You stayed inside, you social distanced, you sprayed your counters down with Lysol, antibacterial stuff. And you know what? You shouldn't even be buying antibacterial soap. I saw a study, again, that a high school student did that actually went up to the college level, and they verified it, that one of the reasons we're having super infections and penicillin is no longer working is because of all the antibacterial stuff that was put in the soaps and everything, and it's starting to have an effect, so they don't work anymore. So you shouldn't even be using them. You should only be using them in very limited, specific circumstances when you know that you got MRSA or staphylococcus or something because you're in a hospital situation and you're working on that stuff. That's a different story. And yeah, then maybe you want to, and maybe you want to disinfect the counters and stuff. But in the household, it's ridiculous. You know, kids go out and they eat dirt. My brother was eating dirt. My mother got all worried, took him to the doctor, and he said, "Hey, he probably needs minerals. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's good for him." That this was, you know, 45 years ago. I don't know what they would say today, but that's what this doctor told her, and I believe it. I mean, if it was poisonous, all these kids that you see in the mud and putting their hands in, kids put everything in their mouth. Well, what do you think they're doing? They're building their immune system. So this whole business of hiding out and putting a mask on your face and being fearful, all it's going to do is cause you to really be fearful, because you just lowered your immune system and you're going to catch everything. This guy talks in here about how you handle Walmart, how you can initiate a lawsuit based on, you know, them putting you at risk with the mask, and how they can't question you or it's a lawsuit. Very good video. And he talks about that commercial liability that they have, and that notice of liability, like what the fellow there with the meters was using. What's his name? I'm having a lot of senior moments here today, but doesn't matter. We, the guy from InPower. But anyway, that's my rant on masks. This is the website. You should go visit it. They're in Colorado. They are a good group. We're gonna be doing things together. We're gonna be supporting them. They're gonna be supporting us. You should go visit Julie's site. This is her site. And I'm gonna stop here and stop my screen sharing. And to the question now, if nobody else has anything to say. Okay, let me get back to my screen here, my wall. Well, we got a couple people in the question box. And actually, if you want, I'll put up something here on trouble is, I don't know if I have that when I have this up, if I can work the wall. I don't know. But anyway, let's get to the questions here. Okay, we got Dan from the Carolinas. I'm going to unmute you. Are you ready?
Greetings, everyone, and I'll try to be very brief. Mr. Gerard, you're one particular individual that I admire, and more so, I think this question should be directed to the, about 2 weeks ago, I suspect it was, that this young lady called in and did an awesome job of reflecting on the fact that we all find ourselves being before some judge here, there, yonder, and never is the case when that judge is of proper jurisdiction of that court and all this stuff. What's new is what could be the comment. But anyway, she was stating as to her research that we have every bit of right, especially, I'm thinking, and I hope Mr. Brent's on this still left on there. He might be. Needed is that I'm under the presumption that she was referring to like a civil matter, and that the litigants would be so entitled to put a motion before the court, and that motion would have the power and the jurisdiction to carry. And it was, as you remember, Mr. Girard, it was for arbitration. Do you recall that?
Yeah, where we suggested that you go to arbitration rather than go through that family court baloney, I think.
Did you sure did. And did by any chance, either you have first-hand knowledge or either or got first-hand knowledge of the procedure or the exact law or the exact motion that the young lady was referring to? My understanding was she was going to send to you a definitive of this.
I did not see that, if she did. I don't know if she sent it to my email or what, but I don't recall seeing it. And I know that when you want to do arbitration, you have to present it to the judge, and you have to have an arbitrator, you know, a professional arbitrator that comes in. And once
right.
you do that, the judge can't refuse you, because I don't know, the parties have to agree to arbitration, first of all. I think if you had one party that didn't want to arbitrate, you wouldn't be able to do it, you know, unless you have a contract ahead of time. You'll notice that in all these adhesion contracts and stuff, if you read them, they all want to go to arbitration rather than go to litigation, because they hire these arbitrators, which are cheaper than lawyers, and they tell you that you can't sue, you have to go through arbitration, and you have to go by the ruling of that arbitrator, if you ever read some of these contracts.
Absolutely, and I remember you telling me some of the reasons, especially as drawn out over the years, as this has been for my family, that would be a good reason to go that route. However,
we'll get you out of the politics of the court, especially if you get a good company that doesn't
right.
have any strings attached, which shouldn't be too hard to do if you do a little research, but go ahead.
Yeah. However, I have sent you guys a courtesy of the latest scheme of my brother, as you can imagine, he howling the world that he's going to pull this off when he and his wife have filed in Wilmington, North Carolina, with the U.S. Bankruptcy courts, and God, I don't know. He's laundered our real estate proceeds of here, there, yonder, plus financial assets. Gosh, in other states as well. And so we're not talking about just peanuts here. And to my understanding, I've known him to be so crafty, he's never paid the state or the federal government in all the research we found. So I don't see how in the world he's going to be able to prevail with such a massive wealth that he has been laundering. But now, with that said...
Doesn't he have cognitive problems, you told me? Isn't he like...
Yes, sir. We have been apprised by this third party through his church for about 2 years now. He's supposed to have dementia, and now he has, as you've learned all along, that his wife is fully in charge of all of his affairs. So she's got power of attorney, and it's an unbelievable lengthy, very powerful attorney. And he's initialed all the way through this, apparently. And but we're running out of time because my firm that I've been paying for policy has mandated so much unbelievable red tape for me, I'm about ready to publish it in a morning, and it is definitive, if I must say. It is certified as if it would go to either the Supreme Court of North Carolina or if it went to the Supreme Court of the United States. It doesn't matter, or any other state for that matter. And so we're dealing with a group of people that's joining in officials, the best way I can tell you, not to go any lengthier here, is he has other has had other accomplices of so-called law enforcement. So this puts the case clearly with former district attorneys of two counties in New Hanover County and Brunswick County. And then there's even something in South Carolina in Horry County, but it's minor compared to Brunswick County in North Carolina, the officials. And they are caught up in what definitely could be a tremendous RICO Act violation. And I know you know what RICO Act means.
Yeah, well,
on top of everything else. So I'm running out of time here because of what has been put on me to send up to this company that's, I'm not going to call their name, but I guarantee you know who I'm talking about. I've been paying for years for a policy every month, and they've always mandated me to be a lawyer and send them all kind of unbelievable research on anything that I ever wanted to have representation. And so it's been a situation that's all, and I've never, of all these many years and all this controversy, I have had to defend this homestead that I'm at tonight, and I'm not going to call the address, of course, or anything like that, but I can tell you I've had to defend it through unbelievable these officials and where even the clerk of court, mind you, is caught up into the with Douglas in countless situations of cases, and they've not prevailed yet, and I've not had an attorney through not any of these except one particular time, and when that did occur, this gentleman was able to come to my aid, an attorney. And it came to a point that the title was proven that clearly that I was the sole owner. And boy, you have no clue. If you've seen what I've been through with just this homestead, all orchestrated pretty much, but the so-called powers to be and Douglas, I'll just say Douglas. And so now he thinks he's going to use these courts again with this last hoorah. The only thing is, I need a continuance for someone to step in. I've sent Mr. Jan and you a courtesy copy of the caption and the entire information that's been sent to me, and it's a U.S. District Bankruptcy Court, and it's one good news is it's a wage earner plan. So, but still again, all the research and what's due and everything, there needs to be demands placed upon Douglas because actually he's in default in what is called a preliminary resolution document. I've expressed this to you guys many times this whole year. This document is well intact. It was noticed properly back to my brother, and he was did not respond timely. So, matter of fact, he was supposed to respond. I'll just say, I won't call the year, but say he was noticed like September the 29th, and then I put in there a affiant, which is me, saith naught by October the 29th of the same year. And this had to do with my mother's estate, and he was being noticed by the courts anyway, along with me noticing of the hearings ongoing, and he never responded, and when he did, it was December the 1st of that particular year.
So he defaulted, basically, is what
you're saying. So he defaulted, yes, sir. And I need a default judgment, and that's only a small portion. It's peanuts. But it's on one page, and it's certified as of this night. I have this certified documents, and it's in the Register of Deeds, and it's located in Brunswick County, state of North Carolina, and in Bolivia, North Carolina, to be exact. And then it is noted in with our attorney of record for the estate, for my mother's estate, Then three different copies does that attorney have of the preliminary. It took us over three months, you're not going to believe what I'm getting ready to tell you, try to close this, to find his response because of this COVID, the coronavirus and stuff. I couldn't get in there and show those clerks exactly where, even though I was telling them where these were located. And as it turns out, it just in the last few days have we been able to discover this document of response, because you have to prove that he did respond. Otherwise, they'd say, well, your documents didn't get delivered. You're going to have to resend this or whatever. No, he responded.
Right. So
he responded.
That's proof of notice. Now, let me qualify myself, first of all.
Sure.
This whole thing's way above my greasy-fingered, fat-fingered mechanics' pay rate. So I can't give you real legal advice because
I understand that.
I am not anywhere near what you might imagine I am. I mean, but I do have one thing. I use common sense, and I have a certain thing with strategy. Like, I might not even understand some of what you're telling me, but I always look for who's the kingpin, who's the problem? Who's the bully in the room? Now you got this woman who's got this airtight power of attorney. Sounds to me like she knows what she's doing.
Yes, sir.
And maybe she's the kingpin. So I always look for who's the one that's kind of running the thing. And just what you told me, without knowing a lot of stuff, I would concentrate on her, because it looks to me like she's running the thing and she's got other people that she's talked in to come in and help her, like you said, RICO, because maybe there's some monetary gain for them or whatever. But when you're pushed back like this, if I had to go after somebody, I would go after her, and I would do a countersuit. Now, I don't know exactly how I'm telling you that you got to get proactive to knock her down somehow, and I don't know exactly.
Absolutely.
What you'll do.
You are absolutely. Mm-hmm. What, we got to interfere somehow or another.
Yeah, somebody open something up.
You are speaking so parallel for the last several years of the maneuvers that she's been using to move property, that clearly every time her and her husband Douglas will state that this is given without title opinion. I don't know who in the world would ever purchase what has been the kind of property. Some of it's on this island right up the street from where I'm located. And, I mean, these properties have been let with no title opinions and given out what looks like a purported deed, a fire sale. And I can tell you that it's apparently, to my way of what I've researched and seen, that she picks little attorneys here, there, yonder, and they will do this stuff, but then again, they'll state that there is no title opinion whatsoever. It's clearly, no question about it, that she has already spoken to one of my family members, and I'm not going to quote who that would be, and she said that she was going to be the one, without question, to handle all affairs, that she was sitting in the driver's seat, in other words, is what she let one of my cousins know.
It's hard to get a handle on everything, all the twists and turns. Plus, she's taking advantage of this coronavirus because nobody wanted to do anything, so she used that particular thing in her advantage to stall you and to push this thing further out, just like everybody's using it. But it seems to me that you had an opinion that you're the sole owner of that property, and I would rest heavily.
Oh, I've already got that part. Listen, so we can close here. The preliminary resolution document has multiple large tracts, highway frontage type properties, waterfront properties in this. It's a one-page document, but it's up into massive amounts of because it covers a settlement of everything that you've ever heard in the way of anything from my parents' financial, bank funds, Sigma funds, even my dad's proceeds. He stole father's life insurance policy proceeds that was clearly my mother was the beneficiary. I could go on and on with this, but look, I'm trying to let you know.
For an attorney general to me.
you bet. Well, you won't believe this. I hate to say this, but these briefs over the years have even gone to be sent to our attorney general in Raleigh. And all kind of officials and all kind of sheriffs and all kind of DAs, and there's several of these that are implicated as clearly. There's no way they can get out of this. And so no probable cause hearings whatsoever. Unbelievable. Even social services of two counties, and when there are 42 minutes and 45 minutes, two reports given of the foul play, because my mother was at the time was in a nursing home, and there was a kidnapping by this party. That how in the world he's been able to do this kind of mess?
I'm gonna tell you something.
Yes, sir.
You're in a system, and it's like St. Paul. I think it was St. Paul in the Bible said, "Why do you go to their courts looking for justice? They have control over that." I'm gonna tell you just what they use to do tax for sales on houses is so corrupt. That's why she's getting away with it, because they're corrupt to begin with. Their whole process is corrupt, and they know it. And they're letting her get away with it because they do it to the average person just when they convert the deeds and do what they do with their in-rim property stealing, and they steal the deed.
All right.
It's every.
I know all about in-rim.
And so
I know all about in-rim and rim, and I know all about that stuff.
You're talking to these guys that are doing this every day, and you're expecting them to give you justice. They're not going to give you justice because in order to give you justice, they're pointing the finger at themselves. To me, that's what's going on.
Yes, I was about to tell you there just for a second while ago so you'd get a good feeling for all this conversation. Even though we had this preliminary resolution document that has been, as you already know, proper certificate of service, all this used the big post office over there. We have all the receipts and everything for this. And there was multiple notices, by the way, to Douglas. Regardless, I had situations to have to hire an attorney, and items that are under the preliminary are already over with in my favor as to the will. It's been probated, and that this homestead is clearly, as my brother would have known, if he's confident, would have come to me anyway, that the will has prevailed in that regard. Still again, is I need right now to intercede into this bankruptcy, either put a NC injunction relief or an estoppel for fraud or a motion in there for continuance of time to have an attorney to put in reasonings for existing tribunals that are already started but yet are not finalized, and this would shed a true, blue, correct reflection of a reality and legal and totally legal as to what are these properties that could come in into this bankruptcy court is whether they're legitimate or not legitimate to start with. And then there is also other states and other entities that's in the state of North Carolina that is not in the notice that I sent to you and Mr. Chan and Mr. John. And I know of these, and some of this information is definitely is by law it's not just peanuts either. It's serious amounts of funds, and it, again, it has to do with my mother. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, that's part of the
problem. And they need to be—they need to have a fair chance to deal, just like I do for the estate. And I can't settle the estate without having a default hearing, a probable cause. So many probable cause hearings. It takes us—I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long it would take us. There's so many strings of felonies, and these felonies. Majority of them are such that they cannot be, the time clock can't alleviate them. I mean, he cannot, they're tribal and they're felonies, and there's no statute of limitations on these crimes.
And
a lot of it is, of course, financial crimes, of course.
Don't forget, there's the correlating factor that somebody allowed it to happen. So what happens is when you go in looking for these probable cause hearings and things, it ends up exposing the officials that let it go by. So that's why you get stalled. That's why some of this stuff sometimes has to be removed out of that county, because there's a conflict there. There's clearly a conflict.
Right.
And I don't pretend to understand the whole thing, you know what I mean? To me, it's like there's a lot of gobbledygook there that I wouldn't get if I wanted to. However, I know with courts and stuff, it's usually easier to get a continuance or an estoppel on something. They're used to doing that. That should be not a hard thing for you to do, you know what I mean? That's probably a document that you got. Of course, don't forget, you're dealing with the judge that's over there that you may want to just get it out of there, in my opinion, because if they've already done all this stuff over there, they've...
Well, how can you... and that's what would be the next question. How can you... No question about this is that there is fraud, and we have never had due process law. And I know that Mr. John, and what? Listen, once you guys see... was getting ready to go. I'm going to do probably a Dropbox. My office manager tells me the best way to do it in closing is do a Dropbox, told me this today, and then go in there and put a series of folders, and I'm looking at tray after tray after tray, and these trays are jammed full of prima facie evidence in a chronological order. And I can get it starts out with my mother's will. It starts out with fraudulent forged. We've now learned forgery deeds, and so it's not nothing. But when a forgery deed comes into play, I don't care where you have it, whether it's in a public record or not. You've heard this before. It's instamatic, a piece of paper that goes in a trash can. It has no legal, bears no title of conveyance to anyone. It's just a piece of trash, piece of paper. And so there's about five. It's very simple. And then we have we have him in court, and he's already had to own up, and it's certified. The transcript and everything that he is needing to be processed. And if I don't get justice, I'm going to have to call in the U.S. Marshals, and they're going to have to...
You kind of took the words out of my mouth, because you have to become proactive. You have to be on the attack now. You can't keep backing up. And
oh, no, I'm not. And I do, because the time is right now. That if you go back and look what I just sent, and it's got two captions, two Stanlins on it. I'm not going to call over this air. But anyway, you guys have got it, and it's the case, and it started over there, and so I've got to have a representation on this.
And I need continuance. Look, it sounds to me like a lot of it, besides the fraud and the criminal stuff, that it's all due process violations.
Yes, sir.
Which means it could all be brought into federal court, and they'll hold the
block. Yeah, absolutely.
You could take that, all that paperwork, you can open a case, and you can start filing it in that court, and they'll hold it. And building the case in there before you actually come in and litigate it. And sometimes when you do that, that's enough for the other side to say, oh, my gosh, He's in the federal court. He's got all this evidence in there, and if they're smart, they'll fold before it gets into, before the judge gets a hold of it. I mean,
yes,
I'm just giving you off the top of my head. I'm not.
I got you.
I don't even know that I understand the full comport.
You will not. There's no way that, I mean, you're hearing me speak over the course of a year at least more, but when you see these documents, they don't take but just a few minutes. These documents, I'm telling you, I've been trained by a Supreme Court justice in the state of South Carolina, and I was a delegate to his training, and his name, I guess he might be the late Ernest Finley in Greenville, South Carolina, but I went to Columbia, South Carolina, and I was a delegate, and even my mother went. And I've got my original badges and it's a citizen summit is what it is, and it to make the courts accessible for minorities, we the people, etc. So I can sure tell you that I've had enough training with a retired Supreme Court justice and enough of 30 to 40 years of all the fun that anybody could ever stand that could be thrown to you by the most traverse people on this planet.
Well, look at
and
you
can read without one, with only one attorney.
Above me.
I had one attorney, even though I've been playing a policy, and the CEO right now is shaking at his boots. He wants justice for me.
Right.
I'm going to close right here. You will believe that you need to hear this. I really probably ought to call tomorrow and tell Jan this rather than put this public.
Right.
I'm almost thinking I will,
Why don't you do that, and I'll call Jan, because I don't even know. I mean, I just gave you off the top of my head, and I've been very busy with all the other stuff we're doing here. So I don't even, you know, I haven't even had a chance to really look at what you got, or even know that it's something.
Oh, you're going to see typed up briefs that have been presented to the powers of to be in this county, such as when I couldn't get justice, I spoke on 7/7/2003. My mother was living, and I've got the documents that I typed up and presented to the county attorney that night and the county manager and all the other county commissioners, and then I got an array of documents on other occasions where I have been, I guess you'd say, honored or whatever you call it, to speak for the lack of due process of law to the county. And then while they were in, you know, public meetings, and I can tell you in closing, a tremendous lot of these professional briefs have ended up and gone on to the North Carolina Real Estate Commission, and then the North Carolina Real Estate Commission have sent some of these right straight on up without me having to even do it myself, straight on to the Attorney General's office.
Yeah.
Then there's been other situations where this brief has gone because when you don't get the local sheriffs and these people, you have to go higher up. I'm telling you, buddy, this has been the most unbelievable experience that anybody could ever find theirself for about 30 to 40 years now of just the most traverse of justice, the miscarriage of justice for my dear, precious mother, who her life was shortened at the teen, Mr. Douglas. And that's talking about two times being kidnapped away from, even the one of the times was from a nursing home under a doctor's care. How he done that is beyond me.
Yeah, well, it's a horror story, and I'm over here.
Listen, I do need to close here because why I called it was, is if you guys have got something, I would agree to go in arbitration And when you see a smidging of these legal briefs and the cases and all this and that are in there, court cases concerning this estate, and it's overwhelming.
I always tell people I know just enough to make me dangerous, and that's no lie. But we do have and that's why I don't really can't give you advice because, you know, I'm not sure how to handle on the whole thing. But we do have a member, and I'm going to call her and ask her because she is a professional arbitrator and she knows the ins and the outs, and she might
fabulous.
She might even be listening tonight, so maybe
I hope she will get
over to Nikki, and she'll give you. Maybe she has some advice for you. I don't know, but she probably knows way more than I do about it. I mean, like I said,
yes, that would be most helpful.
I touch this and I touch that, but I'm not an expert in any of it. I'm like the jack of all trades type thing. I just happen to have a good memory on, and I don't forget right away. But you need somebody that really gets in and, you know, look, I can start a lot of things, but whether or not I can finish it, that's the problem. You need to finish. That's what you need.
I need a closure because I'm the executor of, and it looks like I'm going to inherit my father's estate. Matter of fact, these documents are absolutely that I have here are definitively as far as what is in the registered deeds and the estate for two of my parents. I have these certified documents. Everything almost is perfected that can be where it's coming from public records that are certified. It cost me thousands and thousands of dollars over the last, I don't know, 30 years, 25, whatever. It don't matter. But anyway, I did three pieces of paper at the register of deeds the other day. You know how much that cost me? Because they're certified.
Right. I can imagine.
It cost me $9 for three pieces of paper. Can you imagine how many pieces of paper of judgment orders and all this other kind of stuff and the estates files and the registered? That was in the registered deeds, by the way. So when you're talking about certified in these documents, they charge $5 for the very first page and $2 a page.
Right.
So you can understand there was three pages, that was $9, and that averages $3 a page. Okay, that's enough. My mother is well worth many, many times for her and her grandchildren to have some justice here.
Okay, Dan. I'll talk to you later. Have a good night.
Thanks, sir.
I'll see what I can find out, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. I'll call Jan and tell him something confidentially that, and I want you to find out too, but I won't do it over this, you know, airwaves.
Very good.
Okay?
Yeah. God bless.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to bring up Yasser Malik Aban. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I'm going to unmute you. You are unmuted. You could correct me on the name. Yasser. I'm getting a buzz. I don't know. You got your
hello,
mic.
Hello.
There you go. Now I can hear you.
How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Okay, I'm going to try to put this in a nutshell.
Okay.
Without taking all the time. I bought a house in Newark, New Jersey apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Subject to take a title, subject to the debt. A relative called me up about this property from a gentleman named Robert Tracy. So I brought it from Robert Tracy. I did everything, desktop, closing, all that kind of good stuff. All right. I got a little sick a little bit, had to cool down. But I did this before I even got sick, you know. I put a lien on a property, UCC lien, $2 million of silver coins, right? All of a sudden later on, it went into auction. Some Jewish guys picked it up, After they picked it up, matter of fact, they came on the porch, told me they were going to get it, and said, I told them, you can't get it because there's a lien on it. He said, well, we don't worry about liens. We can take care of that. I said, okay, no problem. I'm going to tell you right now, you messed with the wrong guy, understand? So anyway, the bottom line was this. They tried to evict me as a tenant, landlord tenant, first, okay? Went to the court, get a judge, all my paperwork. Now, in mind you, they had me down John Doe first, and she kept on asking my name. I said, well, I'm not getting my name, but this is the problem. This is my paperwork, and this court has no jurisdiction on this matter. I am a owner, not a tenant. So this is a dispute of ownership.
So wait a minute. Who foreclosed on it? Was it the city? Was it for taxes? Why?
No. Foreclosed on mortgage foreclosed.
That was a mortgage foreclosed. Okay.
Right. The bank is called.
But in the meantime, you had put a lien on it before it was foreclosed.
Yeah, way before. Way.
Okay. And you got that all documented and signed and sealed.
Yes. At the Treasury. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Then. After that, like I said, went to court, tried to get my name out of me. They tried, she told me to come back with a lawyer because I need a lawyer. And I told her straight up, I will be back, but I'm not coming back with a lawyer. I understand I'm fighting my case myself.
Right.
A week later on, I came back, and it's interesting because I came back, the lawyer said to me, hello, Mr. Ali Bey. I said, oh, you know my name now, huh? I said, how can that be? He said, well, don't worry about that, but let me ask you a question. What you're saying, you're absolutely correct. Talking to their lawyer, he's absolutely correct. He is sole owner of this place on paper, and this is a dispute of ownership. So what I'm going to do for you, Ms. Ali Bay, is what? I'm going to dismiss this case, right, without prejudice, and you have a good day. And she told the lawyer, you're finally attending that place. Because this man is not a tenant. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, I got to pay work for this dismissal. Right? After that, COVID came in. Then they came in, still doing a little thing, fixing up stuff. We fighting everything. I said, you know what? I'm not fighting. I'm going to fight on good offense. So, last week, Monday, they came again, another eviction paper.
Notice, right.
Huh?
A notice, eviction notice, yeah.
Eviction notice, right. And I told the guy, I'm not accepting this here. He said, well, you got to say, understand something. I don't have to do nothing. Understand? Because they have no standing in this here. They know it and I know it. He said, what you mean they have no standing in this? What you talking about? I said, I give you the paperwork. He saw the paperwork and said, you got a point there, but I don't think it's going to work. So he said, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. This guy, black guy, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take your word for it. I'm going back to my boss today, show him the paperwork and say, tell him what you did. Okay, he called back at 9 o'clock because I get my phone. He called back at 9 o'clock at night. He said, Mr. Ivey, they said to me, this is an old paperwork. I said, oh, what do you mean old? He said, well, they going back again to evict you. I said, understand something. You fell and missed the point. Okay, I said, I understand that if I was a tenant. Okay, the paper says this. I said, understand something, and he didn't really know it at the time. I said, it says, I am an owner. This don't have no standard. They call me as a tenant. Now as a squatter. It's interesting. Squatter. Pay $2,000 for electric credit. I pay a lot of money. But anyway, I said, okay. He said, I'll tell you what. I'll go back and talk to him. You said dispute ownership before. He said, okay, right. They never call again. Never call. So my question is this here. I just want to do a motion to dismiss. You know, I got the paperwork. Matter of fact, even by, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, even by law, let me just go back a little bit. Even the rules of law of title, the rules of law of 4.64 foreclosure and mortgages, it says it right there. You need a certification to prove that you did a title search. I asked for the certification. They can't bring it. You know what I mean? So I said right there, you're fraudulent. Right. And everything else you did. So my bottom line is this. Lady called me this morning to congratulate me as a being a member with your guys. And I got a lot of stuff to do with other people, too. But she told me to call tonight because I forgot that it was a Monday night calls. So my thing is now, how can you guys, whatever it's paid for, help me to get this paperwork like I want done so I can go back there?
Well, that's a good question. Is it in a court? Or I mean, they're bringing you eviction notices, but it's not in a court. There's not a judge, right?
The judge. The first judge who dismissed it, she dismissed it, and
now this latest eviction notice, he brings it into you. He's not in a court, though. Did he file it in the court?
Yeah, they filed in the court.
Yeah.
But only that to say they filed eviction in the court. That's all I know.
Yeah, so you can file an eviction in the court, a notice, but that doesn't mean that there's a judge on it unless you ask for judicial intervention. That's just a legal process that an attorney would use to have you evicted, and then it would go in front of the judge, and you'd have to say there's fraud or whatever you got to do. You'd have to get in front of that judge and have a hearing. Whatever you have, I would bring it into the judge, and I would say, look, here's the deal. And you already had one judge that dismissed it under the similar circumstances, right?
Right, right.
So that kind of gives you standing where you're at, no? I would think.
Yeah.
I would lean on that, and I would bring it to that judge, and I would say, look, I want it dismissed with prejudice, again, because there is no other proof of ownership. I'm the owner of record, right?
Right.
And you have no choice but to dismiss it unless you have other evidence that the court doesn't know about, and you need to submit it now. And I think you could probably force her hand. You know, I mean, they're in there with paperwork that basically is fraud, and that's what I would say.
Yeah,
look, it's fraud. So you need to dismiss it now because otherwise you're party to the fraud. Then we have to take it, and then I have to sue you and the court and everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, you're going to end up sitting in front of her and pleading your case to her, as far as I can see, because she has the case. It's in the court. It's been filed with her. And you already have one judge that has dismissed the same dang thing, though.
Yes.
So you kind of got a precedent there, and that's what I would rest on. I would say, look, I already had it gone through once. What changes this situation from the last situation? It's the same thing, you know?
Okay. So, but I got to do the proper paperwork, though, right, for that?
Yeah, and you know what? You're talking to the wrong guy, because I don't know exactly. Each court, you're going to have to, see, they should help you, but they won't, you know, because you don't have an attorney, and they're supposed to.
I could do all of it. I'm pretty good with this paperwork, though.
Yeah, well, they probably have it's a motion. I would assume you'd have to put a motion in however they want it. You know what I mean?
That's what I thought. That's what
I thought. So I would say that you have to put a motion in since you're already in the court. There's probably already an index number or whatever. You got to stick with that, and you got to go under that, and you got to make that. You got to move the court. So that's what I would do. I would move the court. I don't, you know, under common law, we don't like to say motion and stuff, but you're not in a common law court anyway. You're doing this commercial process, basically, in a municipal court. So you got to kind of stick to the commercial stuff.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have to get all squirrely about everything. It's already, and you already had one judge dismiss it already. So I think you're in good shape, to be honest with you.
Okay, cool.
You know, so I would rest on that because that's that judge reputation. What's this judge going to do? Go against the other judge? You already got the kind of precedent there. This guy's just pulling fraud. He thinks if he pulls it enough times, he's going to get away with it. It's like a little kid that keeps asking for the candy bar after you say no. Right?
Yeah.
That's all I can say. But anyway, look, it's 12 o'clock, and I hope I helped you. I don't know if I did.
You did. I appreciate it. I'm having fun with it, though, I'll tell you right now.
Well, good. I'm glad you are, because if you can't have fun, then that means it's not right. You're not doing it right or something. Okay.
Appreciate the help. Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a good night. God bless. Thank you, everybody. It's been good, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. And listen, I'm going to give you John's line. Act free and be free. Think free, yeah. Act free, and be free. And that's what we got to do. Yes, get sir. Them, get them dang masks off. I mean, look, I get in trouble. I wouldn't wear a mask because it's. I would never ask anybody to harm themselves. And by putting them things on, you're harming yourself. Okay. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.